changing world where other nations are doing significantly more. Are they doing enough? Effectively, her deputy, James Murray, spoke with me yesterday.
We're not doing nothing, and it's for...
But we're not attacking the VAT or the excise duty as they are in all the other countries.
But the duty is already lower in the UK because we have decided to extend the 5p cut.
Plus, not just covering the news, making the news with this interview of the chief executive of NHS England, Sir Jim Mackey.
We are really worried about this. We've already had a couple of supply shocks in the last 12, 18 months or so of key supplies.
Plus, the Prime Minister will speak later today. We'll look ahead to that on the cost of living and Iran, as it appears increasingly. President Trump is negotiating with himself. And in other news, just exactly what did the BBC know about those allegations concerning misconduct by Scott Mills? Another crisis at the Beeb. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the Prime Minister is expected to give an update later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer's Downing Street press conference is expected to cover both the conflict and government support for households. It says the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC she won't stand by and allow retailers to use the conflict to hike prices. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has more details.
The Chancellor's told LBC that she will protect working people from the war in Iran and will shield the public from unfair price rises. It comes as many bills, including water, council tax, telelicenses and others, will be going up this week. But the government's highlighting other help on the cost of living, including rail fares being frozen, money off energy bills and the 5p fuel duty cut staying until the autumn.
You can read more of the Chancellor's exclusive comments on the LBC app. President Trump has suggested that US forces could end the war in Iran within 2 to 3 weeks. He's also claimed that Iran's military has been decimated. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office overnight, Mr. Trump said he expects fuel prices to also fall in the near future.
All I have to do is leave Iran, and we'll be doing that very soon, and they'll become tumbling down. And stock prices were up today almost to a record.
The BBC has admitted it failed to respond to a journalist's query last May about allegations involving Scott Mills. There's no suggestion it's linked to his sacking on Monday, which the broadcaster says is regarding claims over his personal conduct. The presenter was interviewed under caution in 2018 over historical allegations of sexual offences relating to a teenage boy under 16. Police later dropped that case due to a lack of evidence. A man is due to appear in court after 7 people were injured when a car hit pedestrians in Derby city centre on Saturday night. Sandhu Ponnachan, who's 36, is facing charges including grievous bodily harm with intent. Tiger Woods says he's seeking treatment following a car crash in Florida. The golfer was arrested last week. Court papers show that he's pleaded not guilty to driving under the influence. And the NHS in England is to prescribe the weight loss jab Wegovy to more than 1 million overweight patients at risk of heart attacks and strokes. The health watchdog NICE has recommended the drug, saying it offers an extra layer of protection. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,176. It closed at 48 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.14. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
At Lidl, find your move with a new Privet running range. Grab a pair of carbon running shoes for only £39.99 with advanced EVA soles and carbon plates. These and other Privet products will get you over the line for sure. Available in store now. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after seven, Wednesday, April the 1st. Staring into the teeth of a cost of living crisis. Don't buy what the government says. Are they doing enough? Council tax up. Car tax up. Fuel prices up. Energy prices up. It's up, up and away. And the government is doing nothing. Meanwhile, there is a piece on the LBC website from the Chancellor, and the Prime Minister will make an address, unfortunately not on our watch, but later in the morning. In other news, to an LBC exclusive.
An LBC investigation exposes one of the worst safeguarding failures in recent times, where a young girl was sexually abused by convicted criminals working in an illegal care home. I'm Andy Hughes with the exclusive.
The bungling BBC bosses have done it yet again. What precisely did they know and when about disgraced Scott Mills? We'll give you more details on that. Plus, have you heard of a link-up? No, me neither until this morning. It's where hundreds of people descend on a certain area and effectively have a mass robbery. It was Marks and Spencer's in Clapham on the weekend. Yeah, lawless London, don't buy anything else, that is the reality. Plus, you remember we spoke with then Labour MP Carl Turner in the aftermath of Labour's loss at the Gorton and Denton by-election. That was in February.
What a mess we're in now. Goodness me. I can't remember how many U-turns. Bad idea, unpopular, unworkable, unjust.
Mr. Turner is now suspended from the Labour whip and he will join us later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
What we do know is that the Prime Minister will make an address later this morning after my watch, unfortunately, which he will talk about the crisis in Iran, but he will also, we believe, reference the cost of living. Now, he and the Chancellor, by the way, check out her piece on the LBC website, the LBC app, in which she says many families are taking a hard look at their bills and their budgets. For millions of people, the cost of everyday essentials isn't just something debated over, it's a very real issue. She goes on, I understand families will be wondering what the conflict in the Middle East will mean for their energy bills, the weekly shop, or filling up at the petrol station. As your Chancellor, she says, I will be honest about those uncertainties and act to ensure working people aren't left carrying the cost. I would suggest those are just empty words. What in reality is, you know, how you see it, whether it is with, of course, the price at the pumps for your petrol, your unleaded petrol or your diesel, and God forbid you live off heating oil. That is the reality there. So are they doing enough? Now, on yesterday's show, I was joined, if you were listening, by the Chief Secretary of the Treasury, James Murray. He's effectively the Chancellor Rachel Reeves' deputy. He insisted the government is prioritising issues regarding the cost of living. He pointed to the Fuel Tracker website repeatedly, and I took him around the world, to Ireland, to Australia and other places, where they're doing considerably more. And I put it to him, they're not doing enough.
We're not doing nothing, and it's for...
But we're not attacking the VAT or the excise duty as they are in all the other countries.
But the duty is already lower in the UK, because we have decided to extend the 5p cut.
The duty is lower in the UK.
The fuel duty. Fuel duty, the 5p...
What are you talking about? It's just been cut by 20% in France. What are you talking about?
The 5p cut in fuel duty has already been extended until September. We took that decision, as well as the decision to reduce the energy price gap, last November, because we knew last November that the cost of living was a top priority for people. What is happening in the Middle East, Nick, makes the decisions that we have taken to tackle the cost of living, to bring down energy bills, even more important.
But even the IRAC Foundation is saying, as regards some of the people who are driving diesel vehicles, and there's about 5 million vans, they are effectively bleeding out. Your government is not doing enough for white van man or woman, is it?
We are already doing things to bring down the cost of motoring, whether that is the extension of the fuel duty.
Road fund goes up next month. Insurance levy goes up. What are you doing to bring prices down for motorists? Petrol up, road fund up, insurance up. Do remind me, what have I missed?
Well, I'm not sure if you missed it, because I said it a few times about this 5p reduction fuel duty having been extended till September. But look, Nick, what we're doing, as well as the measures we're taking right now, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor are making contingency plans for what comes further down the line.
I'm sorry, Mr. Barry. The Prime Minister and the Chancellor are, according to one newspaper, welcoming £20 million a day in additional revenue through levies and taxes. That, do you recognise that figure?
Well, yes, but look, can I make an
important... So you are making an extra £20 million a day as businesses are going to the wall.
Let me make an important point here, Nick, because if the VAT receipts from energy increase, that can often be because people are spending less money on other goods and items. And that means that overall, where people pay VAT shifts from other items over to energy and fuel. Now, because energy and fuel are typically at 5% rather than the standard 20%, that can actually mean overall revenue goes down.
James Murray yesterday, and I want to hear from you how it's hitting you, whether it is quite obviously, as it, all of us, I would imagine, if we run a vehicle, if we're fortunate enough to be able to afford to run a vehicle with the price of petrol, unleaded, or with the price of diesel. If you're living off heating oil, my heart goes out to you. Most likely you're going to be in a rural area. That is horrific. Or just going through the stores, just going through Tesco's or Asda or Waitrose, just seeing the prices. Let's turn to LBC's personal finance expert, Abby Foster. Now, Abby is going into Number 10 to interview the Prime Minister, take part in a round table with the Chancellor in the afternoon. What are the lines of inquiry that you're going to press first, Abby? Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, utility bills. What are we doing post-June? You know, we've got the price cap coming in, fine. We keep hearing from everyone in Number 11 that energy prices are falling in April by 7%. But that's, you know, for a very small amount of time. That's from April to the 30th of June. What happens when we start to feel the repercussion of the Middle East conflict on our energy bills? You know, people, like you've already said, heating oil is already such a big problem for so many around the UK. And then next is fuel duty. What are they doing? What's coming next? And then I think my final message, if I get chance, obviously there's a few things I'd love to say, but one is also national minimum wage increasing. Great. But what about small businesses? You know, everyone forgets that the small businesses, the businesses that how like that employ these people have to feel this cost. It's not coming from the government. And so many people are then sacrificing new job creation, and it's actually leading to a lot of problems for the next generation because they just can't get new jobs because they're not out there.
Your roundtable will take place as the respected energy consultancy firm Cornwall Insight says household energy bills will rise by all but £300 in July. Do you think they're doing enough? And Abby, are there more levers that could be pulled?
I think the very tricky lever that a lot of people are asking for, which is obviously to reduce fuel duty, comes with a slight caveat. Like, as an accountant economist, you can see that if you make something cheaper, obviously people are going to demand, like, going to take out more of it. And the problem with that is that we are seeing a reduction in supply, and actually we need to be quite careful of that. So I suppose that's the only reason, well, one of the reasons they haven't pulled that lever. And yeah, I think we're just going to end up seeing this afternoon, I'm hoping we get something in terms of what they're actually going to do to bring that down. But you're right. Yeah, £300 more. And even the energy bill cut that we're seeing in this current price cap is still lower than the average that was promised. The average promise was £150 lower each time. And we're only seeing £117 in this cut. So, you know, what does that look like? Because obviously we're still seeing these rising costs, and why are we still such a price taker in the UK of oil?
Abby, lastly, there's no such thing as a sort of cost of living index, but and I appreciate most of this is anecdotal, but what's the knock on in the supermarkets in the prices of goods that people need just to live their daily lives? Are we seeing any immediate uptick in those?
Yeah, we're seeing an uptick across the board because obviously transport costs go up and those costs immediately get passed on to the consumer. So obviously those perishable goods like fruit and vegetables are becoming more expensive, but also because of the farmers in the UK who are struggling obviously with fertiliser costs and then are having to pass those on. Are they getting enough support? Is there enough support for farmers in the UK with that cost? I don't think there is, and they're having to pass it on. So yes, it's hitting the consumer very quickly when it comes to petrol prices and diesel prices, but also when it comes to food as well.
Good luck later today. Abby Foster, LBC's personal finance expert, taking part in a round table with the Chancellor later today, 12 after 7. Listening to that is Robert Gross, who's a Professor of Energy Policy and Technology at Imperial College London and Director of the UK Energy Research Centre. On that subject, Professor, can I come on the idea of energy and energy researchers and resources? A lot of papers are saying that the North Sea now should be let out again, and a gas field could be ready to supply British homes and businesses by the winter, says Neil McCulloch, the Chief Executive of Adura, a company you probably know or know of. Would you concur with that, Professor? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. well, I mean, in short, I wouldn't really concur with the North Sea, you know, opening up more licensing being the solution to the current crisis. And the reason for that is the North Sea's been a declining basin for the last 25 years. Under the previous government, we had successive licensing of new oil and gas fields. Some of those have come online, many haven't, and the licenses were relinquished. So I'm not a geologist, but we can't overlook the geology, and we can't pretend that there's, you know, enormous amounts of new oil and gas in the North Sea that haven't yet been discovered, because it's simply not there. So I think, you know, we need to understand and keep in proportion what we might be able to get from the North Sea by reopening the licensing rounds. And I think, to be honest, it's a bit of a red herring in the current context.
So what measures should the government be looking at?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that we need to be looking very seriously about is exactly it's a bit complicated how electricity prices work. But for historical reasons, electricity prices shadow gas prices. And that seems a bit nuts when we get nearly 70% of our electricity from a mix of nuclear and renewables. So I think what I would hope the government are looking at urgently is how we de-link the electricity price, or at least that part of electricity that we get from things other than gas, from the price of gas. And that can't be done next week, but it could be done in time for next winter.
You talk about not using the North Sea oil in the current crisis. Is there an argument that to wean us off dependency, this level of dependency on international markets, is something we might look at in the future?
Well, I mean, I think weaning us off fossil fuels is actually about weaning us off fossil fuels. So,
well, we're always going to need some supply of fossil fuels, aren't we?
Yes, we'll always need some supply of fossil fuels. But I think as the role of fossil fuels falls, you know, our reliance on it falls. And I think it's really important to be clear about how this market works. So, yes, we could go in and we could explore for more oil and gas in the North Sea, but we're going to sell that at a global market price, and the amount that we've got won't move that market price because simply isn't enough there.
But, Professor, isn't it right that wind and solar power, and I'm reading this, I don't know, but wind and solar power cannot supply essential surge power at very short notice, known as dispatchable power? If that is true, then we can't rely solely on solar and wind because they can't provide it. Is that, if that's
no,
true?
No, we can't.
I mean, do you know, this dispatch, is that right, talking about what's called dispatchable power?
Yeah, it's right. I mean, we need to have a flexible sources of power. At the moment, we get that from gas. In the longer term future, we'd be able to get that from energy storage and other sources. Mm. But that doesn't mean that for most of the time that we can't be getting cheaper electricity from our domestic homegrown renewables, because we can and we should.
Professor, thank you. Robert Gross, you're Professor of Energy Policy and Technology at Imperial College London, Director of the UK Energy Research Centre. I should tell you, a government minister will be joining us later in the hour. We can put some of those points to him, and we shall. I want to ask how it's affecting you, whether it is if you're heating oil, if you're buying fuel, if you're in haulage, if you're a courier, a poor bloke or woman, if you're driving around in a van, and sometimes you get £1.50 or £2 per package, and it's impossible for you, isn't it? And in a related story, as I said, we don't just cover the news, we make the news here on LBC. Chief Executive of NH England, Sir Jim Mackey, telling us yesterday,
in every area, we've got enough to get through for a reasonable period.
What's a reasonable period? I'm a journalist,
so generally a few weeks.
But in some instances, it will be weeks' worth of supply.
Yeah, it could be days for some products.
Days for some products that could include drugs. We'll return to that story later. 7:16 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's expected to give an update from Downing Street later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC that she won't stand by and allow retailers to use the conflict to hike prices. And a raft of changes affecting household finances, including increases to council tax bills, are coming into force this morning. LBC weather: outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout for the ongoing bridge works. So definitely do expect delays again. But then also on the A40, it's very slow eastbound from the Greenford Flyover to Perivale as some emergency repair works are having to take place. In Wembley, Engineers Way remains closed both ways, and Langley Avenue is closed eastbound between Worcester Park and North Cheam because of the emergency repairs. On the trains on London Overground, no Suffragette line running between Gospel Oak and Upper Holloway. Then there are minor delays on the rest of the line. Still some delays for Thames Link services via Haywards Heath following a signal failure. There are some cancellations as well. And on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Circle Line.
LBC. Breakups, that is a tricky one. That's why EE is the only major provider who'll give you up to £300 to switch. You'll get full fibre, but you'll also get EE's most powerful Wi-Fi 7 as standard. So the whole house can do more, like streaming that series, whilst your work calls stay crystal clear. Switch to EE today. Up to £300 credited to your EE account. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. New BT Group customers only. 62% availability terms apply. Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC. Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Come to your calls in a moment, 20 minutes after 7. Are they doing enough for the cost of living crisis? We'll hear from a senior government minister, indeed a Secretary of State later, taking your calls. Nick, you will be the first caller. Now, this is a taunt from Donald Trump on social media. Get your oil, he's telling the United Kingdom. Go get your own oil is the front page of many of your papers. Trump's taunt exposes a PM without a plan is the Daily Mail. Trump tells UK to go get your own oil is the front page of the Daily Express and the front page of the Times and the Guardian, similar lines. Front page of the Daily Telegraph, Navy not ready for war, says Sea Lord, the first Sea Lord admitting the Royal Navy is not ready for war. Hardly surprising, really, when you think that the Secretary of State for Defence on this show last week didn't know how many ships are in the Royal Navy. But I suppose the fact that the first Sea Lord, normally it's when these senior military personnel come out of service that they start saying how parlous the situation is. We should say that General Sir Gwyn Jenkins is saying this while in post. The Navy has work to do before capable of fighting a war. I won't take you through all of the front pages. One other story that we need to mention is that it would appear that the BBC knew far more than they have let on about the Scott Mills affair and the alleged sex scandal. Beeb knew about Mills' probe is the front page of The Sun. To the LBC app, well, there's two reasons, well, there are many reasons, but two extra reasons to read that today. I had to go on the website. One is the exclusive we're going to tell you about. Vulnerable children exposed to sexual abuse on an industrial scale at hundreds of illegal care homes. I mean, that story, that headline is enough, isn't it, to drag you in. Andy Hughes will find that exclusive in about 40 minutes' time at the top of the what's called the 8 o'clock hour. And also on the LBC app, you will find that piece that I've referenced already by Chancellor Rachel Reeves. 7:22, we're talking about the cost of living, whether the government is doing enough. I say lamentably failing, but what does Nick in Stoke and Church say? Good morning, Nick. How are you? How's Stoke and Church?
Good morning, Nick.
Hello, sir. How do you think the government's faring?
First time calling your show. So basically, I was talking to your producer. So about 2 weeks ago, I was paying about 129 to 133 per litre. Basically, every set of shifts I do, I basically fill up and then I've got enough for the next set. About a week ago,
what is it you do for a living, sir? What is it you do?
I work in local government.
You're working in local government. Okay. And are you on the road a lot? Do you have to do a lot of miles, Nick?
I do about 60 miles a day to and from work.
Okay. So you were paying 129 to 133. What are you paying now?
So last week I filled up, it was about 141, and then I went to fill up today, and it was 154.
Whoa, it's gone up
by about 20p in the last, 2 weeks. And as far as I'm aware, the fuel that we've got is stuff that we've already imported and it's ready to go. So it's none of the stuff that's come from, there's still stuff incoming from Hormuz, and yet the government is saying that they're, protect us from price gouging companies, but clearly they're not.
I was going to ask you, you've almost answered the question for me, because the Chancellor says in that piece today, the Prime Minister will say later today that we are aware and we're taking all sorts of measures. I don't know if you were listening yesterday, but I had the Deputy Chancellor on and I pointed out what they're doing in Australia, New Zealand, France, Ireland, Germany, Portugal. I say they're doing precious little. You're out there, you're filling your tank every day. What do you say, Nick? Well, sorry, not every day. You're filling your tank regularly.
Yeah, they're saying they're doing these things to protect us, but literally nothing's been done. I mean, we're supposedly getting more fuel incoming, and it's been a slow journey. Obviously, it's however many days or weeks to come here, but we're being gouged. And, thankfully, I can afford if I have to pay more for fuel, but obviously there's people that be struggling, and, if it's people that are caring for their family members or something, and they're gouged 20p, so they might be paying, 20% more per tank.
Yeah.
And some people can't afford that, and the government clearly aren't doing anything to help those people that are in a lesser position than I am.
Lastly, I put it to you, Nick, it's worse than that, because the government currently is getting an additional £20 million a day, not just from fuel, but from all energy sources. So that's gas, that's unleaded, that's diesel and everything else. I would suggest they fix the price, they fix their take, so they are not profiting out of people like you who's having to put more unleaded in his tank every few days.
Yeah, because, I mean, what are they going to use that extra on? You know, they could potentially, you know, people that are in a more vulnerable position than me, what are they going to use that extra tax revenue to help them, to, you know, to offset their bills, to help them out, the vulnerable people, or you know, what's happening?
What do you think? We will press another government minister on that later in the hour. Nick, thanks for being a first-timer. Safe driving in your work today. Thank you. First time, first class. Be like Nick. Get it off your chest. Get it on the radio and give me a call on that number. It begins with a zero, and the second number is, I think, five, but it might be an eight, and I really don't know. And I haven't given it for 20 years, so I don't intend to start now. Lee, you'll be the next call on that. Let's talk about other stories. And as I've said already, we don't just cover the news, we make the news here with the story that the NHS is just days away from running out of supplies. Now, on yesterday's show, the chief executive of NHS England, Sir Jim Mackey, was here exclusively on LBC to take your calls. And Freddie in Brixton texted in to ask Sir Jim about the impact of the conflict in Iran on medicine supply in the UK.
We are really worried about this. We've already had a couple of supply shocks in the last 12, 18 months or so of key supplies. Recently, one with Stryker products because of something else.
Sorry, Stryker products?
It's a brand of products, theatre products, etc. So
what do they supply? What is a Stryker product?
Largely theatre supplies, so it's instruments. Yeah,
right.
So, and we've had other examples in recent years. So we've got a team stood up in NHS England across the NHS to focus on where the risks might be through the supply chains, across government process, working out into NHS organisations.
So is
it
across drugs and kit?
Yeah, absolutely.
Specifically, what areas apart from kit?
Well, everything's at risk.
Is that right? 75% of our medicines are imported.
We import a lot of medicines, but it's an international system, the NHS, healthcare.
Right,
so the supply chain is very, very international.
I mean, how much supply do we have? How many days or months or weeks in reserve do we have?
It depends what you're talking about. In every area, we've got enough to get through for a reasonable period.
What's a reasonable period? I'm a journalist.
Generally, a few weeks, but you know you wouldn't because
well, it goes off as well, presumably.
Because things perish and it costs money to store, and you know, various other things go out of use.
But in some instances, it will be weeks worth of supply.
Yeah, it could be days for some products.
Yeah, I wasn't going to let that go, was I? Just listening back to that. Right, let's get to the coalface. That's the boss. What's it like in reality? Ashley Cohen is a pharmacist. He's in Yorkshire. He's a board member of the National Pharmacy Association. Thanks for joining, Mr. Cohen. What's the reality as you and your colleagues in this line see it? Good morning.
Certainly, thanks very much for having me. Gosh, listening to that paints a very, very gloomy doomsday picture in terms of the scenario that's being painted at the moment. Firstly, you wanted to know what's the grassroots, what's the coalface looking like at the moment?
Yeah.
I, as a pharmacist, as a practicing pharmacist, and also representing the National Pharmacy Association that looks after 6,000 community pharmacists, right now, we're not seeing that picture that's kind of seeing medicine shortages directly linked to the Middle East. So, giving a kind of narrative and doomsday scenario that we're days or weeks away from running out of vital medicines, we're not seeing this linked directly at all to the conflict that's going on in the Middle East at the moment. So,
what about prices, Mr. Cohen?
Reassure your listeners, number one.
Prices, how are they going?
Prices are going up, but going to the picture that we're not seeing anything directly linked, I'm not sat here telling you that everything's rosy and everything's perfectly fine in the pharmacy world. Medicine shortages are a daily reality. It's not something new. We're dealing with it on a daily basis. So you and your team and this radio station has covered medicine shortages for a couple of years now, where we've run out of, you know, ADHD medicines, diabetes medicines, epilepsy medicines, and most recently, over the last few weeks, we've talked about low-dose aspirin and simple analgesic painkillers like paracetamol and codeine. So prices are going up. Prices are teetering. And that is normally, Nick, a good indication of instability in the market. And it doesn't take much. I would agree with Sir Jim that it doesn't take much to shake and to send shockwaves into the market at the moment.
Ashley Cohen, thank you for your time. You're a pharmacist in Yorkshire, a board member of the National Pharmacy Association, 728. Lee's in Watford. We're asking how the cost of living is affecting you directly. Lee, your take on what we're hearing from the government. Do you think they're doing enough? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. I think they're doing enough. If you want to reduce fuel costs by 30%, you've got to increase other taxes by about £8 to 9 billion a year.
Well,
I'm just wondering which ones we're going to increase.
Well, no, I'm saying don't profit £20 million a day. It's inappropriate when businesses are in real dire straits. And blokes can't afford to fill up their van. Well, sorry, blokes and women can't afford to fill up their vans. Don't profit to the tune of £20 million a day.
It's not profit.
Well, it is profit because with the increase in energy costs, they're getting an additional £20 million a day into the treasury. They should not be taking that at this time.
They're not taking anything, Nick. The VAT receipts will go down by more than £20 million.
No, as the price of petrol goes up, you're aware that more than half of the cost when you put in a litre of diesel or unleaded goes to the government in either excise duty, taxes or VAT. So I'm saying fix that rate and don't take £20 million off us.
Well, you're not taking £20 million.
Well, of course,
what
don't you understand? The price of petrol goes up.
More than £20 million because
the price of petrol goes up. You're paying more in tax. You're paying more in VAT. And I'm saying that's inappropriate this time, Lee.
It's not profit for the Treasury, Nick.
Where do you think the £20 million goes? The penny's dropped. The £20 million has dropped. It goes to the Treasury, Lee. And it's wrong. It should not be. Where there are people, and I am sure there are people setting out in their vans today, professional drivers, lorry drivers, haulage firms, they can't afford it. We should not be profiting. Lee, I think you and I are just going to have to agree to disagree, but disagree to part. Enjoyed your input. Thank you. Let's see what a government minister makes of it. Well, let's talk about a product you either love or you loathe. Well done finding that advert. Whoever found that is a genius. I Hate Marmite advert from 1997, but the Marmite maker is cooking up a big deal. We'll tell you more in our regular look at the world of business. Just on 7:31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's expected to give an update from Downing Street later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. Separately, President Trump says US attacks on Iran could end very soon, suggesting a timeline of 2 to 3 weeks. The Chancellor has told LBC that she won't stand by and allow retailers to use the conflict to hike prices. Rachel Reeves' comments come as households will notice increases in bills, including council tax, from today. And a man is due to appear in court after 7 people were injured when a car hit pedestrians in Derby on Saturday night. Sandhu Ponachan, who's 36, is facing charges including causing grievous bodily harm with intent. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
At the moment, we've got the commitment to some energy help for those who really need it, an as yet undefined group with an undefined amount in help. This is all going to be massively inflationary, and Keir Starmer has frankly placed his entire leadership now on making you feel richer. Well, then some VAT cuts are needed for petrol, aren't they, or some fuel duty cuts are needed.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Calling all young creatives. Kickstart your career in media. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12 at Global Academy. GlobalAcademy.com.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. That's why right now you can get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore II. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for £8 for under £1.60 per person with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce and, of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/vendless for details.
Annette Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, more of your reactions. The cost of living, are they doing enough? How is it affecting you and that £20 million a day that's rolling in the increase in energy prices? If we're talking about increase in prices, just before we bring our business commentator Christian May into the conversation, we've just done a quick bit of research on the price of a barrel of oil. Before the Iran conflict, it was coming at $72. This morning I'm reading it's $103. The highest it's ever been was on the 21st of March at $117. With that background, let's turn to Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, because it's making front page news again. Christian, what's the latest development? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, we have a story on the front page today under the headline of Awful April, which looks ahead to all the tax rises that are kicking in. But that is a depressing look forward. So let's instead take a depressing look back at the month of March. Manic March, as some in the city are calling it. You've just cantered through the extraordinary journey that the price of oil has been on, and we are seeing and feeling the impact of that. Questions and concerns about aviation fuel, huge pressure that everybody's feeling at the pumps, debate about how and when and to what extent the Chancellor may offer support to some households. Big questions now about the cost of energy for businesses. So that is an extraordinary impact of, as you say, the price of a barrel of Brent crude soaring up to $117 at one point, about $104 or something now. I mean, how's it going to continue? What have we been told from the White House? We've been told to expect a major announcement on the Iran war from Donald Trump at, I think, about 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's not clear whether Donald Trump yet knows himself what that announcement is going to be. But we, well, I think it might be worth staying up for. But it's not just the oil price, Nick. The FTSE 100 suffered its worst month in March since the pandemic. Despite a few periods of relief rallies based largely on the optimistic rhetoric of Donald Trump, we've seen the London blue chip index fallen more than 7% over the course of the month. That's oil, that's London's markets. Similar story in global markets, of course. The seesawing in US markets in particular has been extraordinary. You know, trillions of dollars of value coming and going in days, depending on people's sentiment. We've also seen, of course, over the course of the month of March, extraordinary impact on the UK's interest rate trajectory and pain in the bond market. So that is a bit of a snapshot to put into context the economic crisis in the UK in our various markets and sectors as a direct result of this war. And I'm afraid no serious forecaster or analyst predicts much calm or relief anytime soon, given the long tail of some of these really painful developments.
All right, let's move to a deal that the city will either love or loathe, much like the product.
I hate Mama.
...1997 advert for Marmite. What's the deal that's being cooked up?
Well, Marmite is heading stateside. I don't know if there's an enormous appetite for the product over there, but as a business, well, Unilever, behind, of course, Marmite and Hellmann's mayonnaise and much else, has sealed a $45 billion merger of its food brands with the US spice and seasoning giant McCormick. Behind such things as such delights, Nick, as I know breakfast for you isn't complete without a bottle of squeezy French's mustard, for example. That's the McCormick brand. They have teamed up. Unilever and its existing shareholders will own about 65% of this new body. And it's the culmination of a big push from Unilever to shift away from its food brands. New chief executive Fernando Fernandez making a bid to build what he calls a sharper and faster company, focusing more on their consumer and domestic products. The food business being spun out and merged in this regard. It's going to be a big powerhouse. Unilever shares actually slumped a little bit on the news, as did McCormick's, but they both companies hope that rationalisation, as they put it, over time will deliver the value. Questions now about manufacturing, about footprints in the UK. New boss says that those are questions for another day.
Let's turn to Bill Hill, William Hill. Problems there. What's coming their way?
Well, they said this was going to happen, and they were accused of scaremongering, and now it's happening. High street betting giant William Hill has announced the closure of 200 betting shops across Britain, placing about 1,500 employees at risk of redundancy. The parent company, Evoke, said this decision is firmly attributed to increased cost pressures, including those tax changes introduced on the sector at Labour's autumn budget. And of course, there are wider issues and cost pressures as well. The affected sites, we're told, represent about 15% of William Hill's 1,300 retail locations. Some people still will shrug and say no loss to the high street. Other people, A, those who enjoy these places, and B, those who work in them, may take a different view on it.
Grateful for that, Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. Talk on the show about the same time tomorrow. We're asking you what the cost of living means in real terms, what the government is doing. Are they doing enough? Mark in South London reminds me there's 50 million of support for heating oil aimed at those in rural areas. You're right, Mark. Thank you for reminding me of that. Of course, although it is only for those most vulnerable. And I would suggest if, as I've seen in some instances, your heating bill or the fuel of the heating, the tank of oil has gone from £1,100 to £3,000. That's going to affect just about every single one of us, isn't it? Bruce says, suicide strategy from Miliband relies on natural weather conditions. Will there always be sufficient wind or sun in the future? If not, what is the backup? We don't control it. And lastly, John, who's in the northeast of England, says, in my line of work, I was speaking to someone last week who works for a Norwegian oil company conducting exploration work in the North Sea. He told me Norwegians are earning trillions from the North Sea and feels not far from where we are drilling. Again, I don't think Mr. Miliband is having any of it. Sam's in Chester. How is it affecting you directly, Sam? Good morning.
Morning, yeah, there. Hi, Nick. I just wanted to say the ministers that you had on yesterday, I thought it was really insulting that the lack of forward thinking that they've got.
Yep.
It feels like we're being taxed on a necessity and not a luxury.
Yep, I agree.
And it's not just about driving, it's about the cost of getting to work, keeping the economy moving. And I think I'm sort of worrying a bit more about down the line when inflation starts to creep, you know, interest rates. And the overall picture, and there just doesn't seem to be anything from the government whatsoever.
Do you run a vehicle, a van, a motorbike or anything? Are you feeling it at the pumps yet?
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed this week from filling up, I'm about £40 increase on diesel, on what a normal tank would be, and, you know, £40's a lot of money, isn't it?
I won't run through again what's happening globally, but in Ireland they've brought it down by up to 20p a litre, the cost of fuel. In France, there are no price rises if you can prove you run a business. The whole of April will be locked off. In Germany, they only allow one rise a day. All around the world, they're taking measures. The government here points to a fuel tracker or a price tracker. It's an insult, isn't it, Sam?
Totally insulting, yeah. I think, you know, a tax adjustment would show the government understands that the pressure the households are under. But again, we're always last out the blocks, aren't we? Everything just seems to be just late in the day.
Safe driving. I think you're right. We've got a government minister joining us later. Let's see what they have to say this morning. But yesterday was not a particularly good offering, I would suggest, Sam. Thank you. 7:41. Let's go to other matters. And it now appears the BBC admitted it knew of allegations against Scott Mills almost a year ago, but failed to investigate. The Radio 2 presenter's BBC contract was terminated on Monday following allegations about his personal conduct. It was reported the sacking related to allegations of serious sexual offences committed by Mills against a boy under the age of 16. But it can now be revealed today a former BBC presenter contacted the corporation in May 2025 to say she had received information about alleged inappropriate communications involving Mills and asked whether the broadcaster was ever aware or involved in any related matters. Anna Breeze, a freelance journalist, reports the Daily Telegraph, also asked the BBC whether it had ever received any formal or informal complaints about Mills relating to safeguarding, inappropriate conduct or harassment. Yesterday, the BBC admitted the information should have been followed up. Gillian Howard, employment law consultant and author of Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer, joins us now. If you were to be consulted by Mr. Mills, he's not had any form of appeal, there's not been any form of a tribunal, he was promptly and immediately dismissed. How fair is that in your book? Gillian, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me on your programme. I would certainly stand up for Scott Mills in this particular case. Natural justice and proper legal processes demand that every employer, including the BBC, should fully investigate serious complaints about their staff and allow them to hear the allegations and state their case before being sacked. And as you have said, it was reported the BBC admitted it didn't carry out any internal investigation before sacking Scott Mills. All the BBC have said is that his dismissal was for personal conduct, whatever that means. And you're absolutely correct. 10 months ago, a former BBC presenter informed the BBC that she'd heard from an allegedly credible source that Scott Mills had been allegedly in inappropriate communications with an underage boy. So the fact that the BBC apparently ignored this information, carried out no investigation, and just sacked Scott Mills is another huge blunder on the BBC's part and a repetition of its disgraceful inaction in the Hugh Edwards scandal.
As an expert in employment law, what would your advice be to Mr. Mills, who I remind our listeners has been convicted of no crime whatsoever? What would your advice be to Mr. Mills? What would your advice be to the BBC?
Well, I think the BBC should get together with Mr. Mills and negotiate a settlement. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not supporting, and neither are you.
No, absolutely right.
Paedophiles or serious criminals.
As alleged. Yeah.
But Mr. Mills deserved to have an independent investigation, a right to reply, before he was dismissed in this ignominious and immediate way. I mean, crimes against children and any sexual offences are appalling, but Scott Mills has never even been charged with or even found guilty of any such crimes. The BBC has allowed this to become a trial in the court of a public opinion.
Gillian Howard, employment law consultant, author of Secrets and Lies, Tales of an Employment Lawyer. A very punchy book, by the way, I can attest to that personally. You might want to get yourself a copy for the Easter holiday. Gillian Howard, thank you for that. Coming up after the news, we'll hear more from a government minister, indeed a Secretary of State, about how they're trying to ease the cost of living pressure. This was addressed yesterday by the Treasury, effectively the Treasury, the Chancellor's deputy, James Murray.
We're not doing nothing, and it's for...
But we're not attacking the VAT or the excise duty as they are in all the other countries.
But the duty is already lower in the UK because we have decided to extend the 5p cut.
We'll have more on that after this. 7.45 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is to give an update from Downing Street on cost of living pressures as a result of the Iran war. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC that she will step in and stop retailers using the conflict to inflate everyday prices. And council tax, water, broadband and phone bills are among those going up across Britain from today. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. One lane is closed on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 25 at the A10 and 24 at Potter's Bar. It's because a van has broken down. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout because of the ongoing bridge works. So do expect delays. But then also on the A40, it's slow eastbound from the Greenford Flyover to Perivale as some emergency repair works are having to take place. On the trains on London Overground, the Suffragette line is suspended between Gospel Oak and Upper Holloway. And then on the Underground, the District line is suspended between Turnham Green and Ealing Broadway. Also on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line and minor delays on the Circle line.
This is LBC.
Psst. You. Yeah, you. Listening to the radio. Up to whatever. We just wanted to let you know there's a lotto draw coming up and...
It could...
Yeah, what he said. Lotto. From the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50k from April 2026, making tax digital means...
You have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
Automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
Find me somebody to love.
This Easter at Dreams, the more you spend, the more you save. With up to £500 off. Anything to add, Beds?
Oh, I do. It all ends on Tuesdays, so don't get caught napping.
All good springs must come to an end.
Dreams. Love your bed.
Right then, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Anglers, ramblers, climbers, five-a-siders, surfers, gamers, bikers, hang gliders!
Book clubbers.
Are we up for it? Let's go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life.
Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
At Lidl, treat yourself to a whole Easter lunch for eight for under £1.60 per person with all the tantalising trimmings. That's a leg of lamb, carrots, potatoes, parsnips, mint sauce, and of course, the gravy. Lidl, more to value. Subject to availability, selected stores, GB only. See lidl.co.uk/spendless for details.
Turn up your taste buds with Dolmio Intensify pasta sauces. From mild creamy garlic and black pepper to bold smoky garlic and sun-dried tomato,
whoa,
and spicy smoked paprika and chili.
Woo-hoo!
Try Dolmio Intensify, pasta sauces with serious flavour. Dolmio, yeah.
Our pet's in a pickle. We're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49. Now, I've already told you that we will hear from the Prime Minister later this morning. Unfortunately, not on my watch, and it is expected he will address the Iranian crisis, or conflict, as it were, and the cost of living issues back here at home. And on the latter of those, we can get perhaps more detail, a degree of detail now, from one of his senior colleagues. I speak of Business and Trade Secretary Peter Kyle, who joins us now. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. Can you give us an idea of some of the measures or some of the issues to which the Prime Minister will point us later this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, how are you? It's good to be back with you again. Yep. Yes, of course, the Prime Minister will be making a statement later. I don't know all of the things that he'll be saying, but of course it's a big day for the cost of living, because we're making lots of investments today. The minimum wage goes up, the national living wage goes up to $12.71. This will put more money into the pockets of about 2.4 million people around the country. We're also, next week, the pension will rise by £575. And we're also making sure that we're getting a grip on the cost of living. So the prescription freeze prize comes in today. That means that prescriptions are held beneath a tenner for people. So it just shows all these different things that we're doing to make sure that it makes a difference for people up and down the country. And we're also launching a new crisis and resilience fund today, which is £1 billion that's spent via local authorities, so that local authorities will have the ability to spend how they see fit locally on people, investing in people. We've got Pride in Place, investing in places up and down the country, and people are feeling the difference from that. Now we're making sure that we can invest in people as well.
How is it to be determined where some of that £1 billion goes?
Entirely by local authorities. And we've seen with the Pride in Place funds that they're doing very wildly different things in different communities, of course, because different communities have different issues when it comes to the sort of infrastructure and look and feel and the ambitions that communities have.
Can you give us a couple of examples, Secretary of State?
Of course.
Possibly down in Hove and Portsaid, or anywhere else that you can say, libraries or whatever, wherever the cash is going?
No, of course. Well, I was down in Worthing earlier this week, and I saw a huge regeneration in the centre of the shopping area where I was there a couple of years ago, and it was really quite a sort of a downtrodden bit of the town, and now they've got a performance space, and it's being there's lots of other social space that'll be made there. And I think because it's so close to the seafront, it's clearly a place where people want to eat out in the summer and things, which doesn't normally happen in places like Worthing. So that kind of investment is great. But now, of course, people can invest that billion into people. And it could be apprenticeships, it could be support for communities and youth groups, it could be other bespoke projects that local authorities want to set up. These are the things that local authorities did in the past really effectively, and now we're returning this kind of local investment in people to communities around the country.
It's interesting you mention apprenticeships, because you've mentioned the national minimum wage. That goes from 16 to 18-year-olds, goes up to £8 an hour, a 73% increase from where we were in 2021. And the boss of Marks & Spencer, Stuart Machin, has said this is one of the reasons behind the decline of the so-called Saturday job. Why are so many younger people struggling to find employment, and what do you make of what Mr. Machin says?
Well, there's lots of reasons behind. And of course, it's a trend that's been going on for quite a while that we do need to stem. And I am very aware of this, Nick, and I don't want to resile from it. When I was on your show recently, we had a lot of conversations about hospitality, and I realised that the hospitality sector is really important for lots of reasons, but one of them is it's a gateway into the economy for lots of people. It's the first job that many people have, including myself. So I want to make sure that pathway is sustained and returned.
But it stops employers employing, isn't it, as Mr. Machin would say, surely, Secretary of State?
Well, the Low Pay Commission, which makes the decisions about the minimum wage and the national national living wage, they are tasked with making an assessment of the impact on the economy when they make their decisions. There's lots of other factors that are there as well, about young people in particular. We do have a situation where too many young people are out of work. Pat McFadden has launched the Youth Guarantee. We're doing various different schemes now, and we're trying to reinvest and reinvigorate the apprenticeship system, because under the previous administration, apprenticeship starts fell by 40%, and we've got to reverse that. So different pathways into work need to be assessed in different ways, but those crucial ones, where people are taking pathways into work via apprenticeships and other ways into the economy via their first job, we need to make sure those first jobs pay, but they're available.
All right. Well, Mr. Machin might suggest that the government is not listening, and the same might be said of William Hill. You're probably aware that 200 High Street bookies now will close, 1,500 jobs lost, and this was after William Hill told the Chancellor the decision to almost double taxes on online gaming from 21 to 40% would cost jobs. It has. The Chancellor didn't listen. 1,500 people out of work. Secretary of State.
Look, we're trying to get a grip on the fundamentals of running the economy.
You're failing, aren't you?
Going into the spring statement, we had growth into the economy, which is sustainable. We had productivity rising. We had record amounts of investment going into the economy. And business sentiment had increased by over 20%
in 2 months. Can we talk about the business, William Hill, that said, if you take the tax up from 21 to 40%, it will cost jobs. No one listened. 1,500 people will be out of work. Well, that's the reality of Labour policies.
There's been a long-term shift when it comes to bookmaking from high streets to online activity. It is right that we make sure that as that shift happens, that the taxation on betting and gaming is shifted appropriately.
Well, surely 21% is enough.
Rachel has made a decision, and we need to make sure that we balance the books and we get the grip on the public finances in a fair and equitable way. And I stand by the decisions that she has made, because it has mean.
Why are you
that
failing
we can
to get the jobless figure down?
We are, as I said, we are investing in the economy, and we've just seen just in recent days.
Do you know how many people are unemployed at the moment, Secretary of State?
Well, I know that there is a challenge with unemployment, and
do you know how many it is, Secretary of State?
I don't know the exact figure.
You're the Business and Trade Secretary, and you don't know how many people are unemployed.
No, I'm not. I'm also, my job is to make sure I support businesses in employing
It's 1.87 million, 5.2%, and another 1,500 have just been added. Please don't give me this trite nonsense about Labour getting people into employment. It's going completely the other way, Secretary of State.
The way to get the people into employment is to get a healthy, growing economy. We have had 10 years that we inherited where there was no growth and high taxation, and we had this vice-like grip on the economy where the only way you got more money into public spending was to borrow more, which is what the Tories did. We had to raise money, invest it, but we also had to do the things that got growth into the economy. We got a grip on the cost of living challenges, and we are investing in getting money into people's pockets. This is the only way that we will have a sustainable growing economy that can hire more people in a sustainable way.
All right.
We cannot lower the unemployment figures unless we have an economy which is growing and businesses that are growing within a growing economy.
One crisis that is out of your grief, of course, is what we're seeing in the Middle East. When Donald Trump tells us to go and get your own oil, how do you react to that from the president?
Well, I see a president that uses the platform of social media very effectively to get messages which are sometimes contradictory, sometimes very strident, and very often are aimed at multiple countries at the same time. But we only talk about, obviously, the impact it has on our country here. But when it comes to the resilience in our fuel supply system, I can reassure people that the AA and the RAC reassure us that the supply is steadfast for the moment we're living in.
Yes.
And when it comes to jet fuel, the aviation industry is telling us the same when it comes to jet fuel. The COBRA meetings and the resilience meetings that are being led by the Prime Minister, Ed Miliband, and myself, when it comes to business, we are looking at the short and the medium and the long-term implications, bearing in mind different outcomes that could come from the conflict in the Middle East.
All right, if we stay with the conflict, it was reported this week that the Treasury gets an additional £20 million a day from the increase in fuel, diesel and energy levies. Where does the money go, and why don't you cap it?
Well, we also see increased costs. So the borrowing costs that have gone up through the bond markets because of the high levels of borrowing that we inherited from the previous government have also pretty much taken up that entire amount. So it's not as straightforward as people seem to think.
But how come other countries take measures, though? I won't run you through the list, but in Ireland, in Germany, in France, in Spain, Australia, New Zealand, they cut excise duty, they freeze the equivalent of VAT, they cap price. Why don't we do the same in the United Kingdom?
Because every country has different circumstances. So if you take Germany, for example, Germany charges VAT on grocery food products. We don't in the UK. So they're taking measures in those areas. So every country is different. It has a different settlement and a different taxation base. We are acting appropriately. You've seen us get a grip on prescription charges, on rail charges, which are now held. With pensions go up £575 on average next week. The minimum wage going up for those on low income.
Right.
We're doing what it takes to make sure that work pays, and for those people who are on pensions, they're able to get by in life. And when it comes to those crucial elements of getting a grip on energy prices, don't forget the energy price freeze comes in today,
yes,
lowering bills by £117 for most families around the country. So these are actions that this government has taken that will help families through a very difficult time and also make sure that we have a resilient economy into the future.
But you probably haven't had sight of this yet, because it's my job to read the papers, not yours, but Cornwall Insight, the energy consultancy, is saying household energy bills will go up by £288 on a typical bill in July. So all the measures you're bringing in will be wiped out in a couple of months. That's the reality.
Well, the measures that we are bringing in matter today.
Matter in July that it goes up by £288.
Yeah, Nick, you're taking one estimate from one consulting company that is into the future. We are acting today to make sure that we get a grip on the family finances and ensure that we get a grip on the challenges from the cost of living. We are also, as you heard from the Chancellor, looking very carefully at the autumn period when we know that there may well be challenges in the system and who might be affected the most, where people might be affected the most, and how we can have appropriate spending in order to support people. And the Chancellor is leading on that work, and I know that she cares very deeply about support where it is needed. Okay. And how government can and might be able to act in those circumstances.
Finally, I've mentioned today's newspapers. This is a story that I don't expect you to know about, but I wonder whether you would conduct similar behaviour. The I newspaper reports that your colleague Steve Reed went to a curry night with major housing developers who paid £2,000 for seated exclusive so-called corporate tables. The developers could benefit from the government's housing policies, particularly if Mr. Reed overrules local councils who reject their construction plans. Firstly, how appropriate is that? Secondly, would you ever go to an event such as that?
Well, I don't know all the details of that, as you very kindly pointed out at the beginning, but I will assume that that was a sort of fundraising event for which, a political event, for which Steve was not involved in the seating allocations and who sat where and who actually attended. I do attend fundraising events on behalf of the Labour Party and for local MPs who want me to turn up and speak.
But if you were the Housing Secretary, would you go to such an event with housing developers where they paid £2,000 to sit next to you potentially?
I will make this bet. I know Steve very well. And I will make this bet that Steve never talked about any government policy that wasn't public, that he never talked about planning applications or anything that was sensitive, and that he had no idea of who he was sitting next to when he went into the room. He is
but
a person that takes very...
I mean, some of the people there have live appeals, planning appeals, that could come under his review. How appropriate is that, Secretary of State?
Well, if they were mentioned, I don't think, and they were discussed and the housing secretary engaged in it, then it wouldn't have been appropriate. But I know Steve very well, and I know for a fact there is no way on God's earth that he would have sat next to somebody and made those kind of indiscretions. You can't buy your way into access to Steve Reed's sort of decisions in those ways. But we do go to these big, large events where there are fundraising events because we have to raise funds.
Yes.
But what we do is make sure that when we do come across somebody who is active in an area that we have policy responsibilities over, we act in an appropriate way, and we never, never say anything that is not already public knowledge.
Grateful for your response to that story that's featured in today's I newspaper. Thank you, Peter Carr, talking about increasing the national living wage, increasing the minimum wage, cutting energy bills, a crisis and resilience fund as well, £1 billion, outlined by Peter Carr, Business and Trade Secretary. Thank you for your time. You've taken us to 2 minutes after 8. LBC News.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Farm Global's newsroom, the Prime Minister is to hold a press conference in Downing Street later to update the public on the war in Iran. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to cover both the conflict and government support for households. Separately, President Trump says US attacks on Iran could end very soon, suggesting a timeline of 2 to 3 weeks. He's told reporters in the Oval Office negotiations are continuing.
We're finishing the job, and I think within maybe 2 weeks, maybe a couple of days longer, to do the job, but we want to knock out every single thing they have. Now, it's possible that we'll make a deal before that.
The Chancellor has told LBC that she won't stand by and allow retailers to use the conflict in the Middle East to hike up prices. Rachel Reeves' comments come as a raft of changes affecting household finances are coming into force this morning. Council tax and water are just two of the bills set to rise, while mobile and broadband contracts are also going up. The Business Secretary Peter Kyle has just told Nick the government is getting a grip on the cost of living pressures.
We're making lots of investments today. The minimum wage goes up. The national living wage goes up to $12.71. This will put more money into the pockets of about 2.4 million people. We're also, next week, the pension will rise by £575. And we're also making sure that we're getting a grip on the cost of living. So the prescription freeze prize comes in today. That means that prescriptions are held beneath a tenner for people.
You can read more on the Chancellor Rachel Reeves' exclusive comments on the LBC app. The BBC has apologised for not following up a press inquiry last year about Scott Mills. There's no suggestion it's linked to his sacking on Monday, which the corporation says was over personal conduct claims. It emerged yesterday that Mr. Mills was questioned in 2018 over historical allegations of sexual offences relating to a teenage boy under 16. That case was dropped, though, against the presenter due to a lack of evidence. A man is due to appear in court after seven people were injured when a car hit pedestrians in Derby on Saturday. Sandhu Ponachan, who's 36 and from Alverston, is facing charges including grievous bodily harm with intent. And Tiger Woods says he intends to seek treatment after his arrest following a car crash in Florida last week. Court documents show the 15-time golf champion pleaded not guilty to driving under the influence. Posting on social media, he says he recognises the seriousness of the situation and wants to return to a more focused place. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,176. It closed up 48 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.14. LBC weather. Outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK. Cloudy in the south. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
If you want to save a few quid, British Gas have a way. You get half-price Lecky and it's called Peak Save. On every Sunday, it's the smart thing to do if you're regular folk or furry and blue. 11 till 4, let the good times begin. You could charge up the car or take the dryer for a spin. Half price electricity, what joy that brings. With British Gas Peak Save, we're taking care of things. T's and C's apply, eligible tariff and smart meter required.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 6 minutes after eight, Wednesday the 1st of April. Coming up, an LBC exclusive that will shock and appall you in equal measure. How vulnerable children are exposed to sexual abuse on an industrial scale at hundreds of illegal care homes. Don't touch that dial, a riveting report follows this. Meanwhile, in other news, President Trump says to the UK, go and get your own oil. Defence Secretary Pete Hegseth defends the president.
And I think the president was clear this morning in his truth that there are countries around the world who ought to be prepared to step up. Last time I checked, there was supposed to be a big, bad Royal Navy.
In my day, it used to be called steaming. Now it's called a link-up, where a group of pod people, mostly possibly robbers, although certainly with some degree of criminality in their heart, decide to descend on somewhere. It was Marks and Spencer's in Clapham. We've been speaking with some residents.
Intimidating, for sure.
Yeah, it was a bit tense.
Yeah, it's chaos. Lots of looting. I don't know why they're doing it. Just for clout, I guess.
Plus, remember this then-Labour MP, Carl Turner, speaking of me in the aftermath of Labour's defeat at the Gorton and Denton by-election in February.
Were you turning on that? You turning on this? Stop picking things from daftness, of the daftest daftness you've ever heard in your life.
That's former Labour MP Carl Turner. He's now had the whip suspended. He'll return later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
To an exclusive LBC investigation that can reveal thousands of the most vulnerable children in society are being sent to illegal and unregulated care homes, some of which are staffed by convicted criminals. LBC's crime correspondent Andy Hughes has spent the last 3 months looking into care homes that operate outside the law and uncovered one of the worst safeguarding failures in the care system in recent history before confronting the owner. Now, a warning, this exclusive report does contain some details listeners could find distressing. I repeat that listening warning. Andy Hughes, LBC's crime correspondent, is in the studio with me now. Andy, what you got?
Good morning, Nick. Illegal children's care homes are operating on an industrial scale in towns and cities across the UK. I've been working with the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, and we've discovered there are more than 800 care homes that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted. Many of these illegal care homes are making huge profits, with local authorities paying an average of £10,000 a week to care for a single child. But there are big questions about who is staffing these homes and what it means for the most vulnerable children in the country. In one shocking case, Nick, a 15-year-old girl who we're calling Alice was transported hundreds of miles from South Wales up to an unregulated care home in County Durham, where staff was told she was a high risk of child sexual exploitation. Two carers who were meant to be protecting the child plied her with alcohol and drugs and sexually abused her for several hours, leaving her with serious injuries. I gained access to this property the first time a journalist is seen inside one of these care homes. Neighbours told me that the carers used to routinely beat up the kids in the front garden. I was told one story, Nick, that one young boy tried to escape through a bedroom window. Instead of helping this distressed child, what the carers chose to do was film them and laugh at them and place a bin for the kid to jump in. Now, this care home is no longer in operation, but I was shown round by a young mother who now lives there and witnessed the shocking living conditions.
These doors have all got like holes in here, so I don't know what this is about.
Right.
But this is, that one was the same. I've got another hole in it there.
So you can see here a hole that's been drilled into the door. And through that hole, you can actually see through it into the room. So that's what the carers were doing. They were clearly spying on the kids through this little hole. The two carers in Alice's sickening case, both ex-servicemen, were found guilty last year of 18 offences, including sexual abuse of a child, intentional strangulation and supplying Class A drugs. Liam Ramsey and Stephen Hurst, both in their 40s, were sentenced to a combined total of 20 years. But I wanted to find out who hired these monsters. Records show that the property was under the control of a company called Map Adventures, and the director is a man called Paul McRory, also ex-military. I discovered that he was living in Cyprus, and to my surprise, he agreed to speak to me, joining me on a video call from a local bar. I wanted to know how on earth he allowed two convicted criminals to look after troubled girls like Alice.
I didn't interview them. I didn't, and this is not passing the buck in any sorts, because it obviously comes down to me. I was 3,000 miles away.
Yeah, but you're responsible for this care home.
I totally agree. It was a false individual. And as you saw from the letter from the ladder and from the police, I asked them on the inquiry, and I said, was there anything I could have done to have stopped this? And the police officer, he said, no, Paul.
Well, I'll tell you how you could have stopped it. Looking into these and not employing two convicted criminals to look after the most vulnerable children in society. That's how you could have prevented it, Paul.
I was the bodyguard for the Armani family. The other one looked after the Queen.
What's that got to do with protecting kids?
Liam looked after the Queen after his conviction. So why didn't the army stop him doing that?
Who told you that? Him?
Sorry?
Who told you that? Him?
No, I know he's got a conviction from a fray and assault prior to that. I know he was in the Blues and Royals. I know he served under the Queen. I've looked after the Queen. I did. If you're in the guards.
Paul, I think a lot of people will be surprised that you employed two convicted criminals. You knowingly employed these two criminals.
The convictions they had nothing to do with a child prior.
But look what they went on to do, Paul. Look what they went on to do.
But they came from a care company. They came with amazing references.
You seem to be making excuses.
The only apology that I'm going to give is that they didn't get there. They were held in remand. because if they were released, they were going to get removed, and I was going to deal with them personally, and my justice would have been swift. I tell you that. So you think I'm being nice about them?
What do you mean by that?
Use your imagination.
To be clear, there is no suggestion that McCrory knew about the carers' abuse, but the checks on these carers were clearly flawed. And the Children's Commissioner, Dame Rachel D'Souza, told us serious questions need to be asked about how people with criminal records were allowed to look after children. Shockingly, though, Nick, despite there being over 800 of these illegal care homes, I can't find any public record of illegal care home owners being successfully prosecuted. Ofsted refused to comment on Alice's case and said it is working hard to investigate it, unregistered children's homes, but that the test for prosecution is high.
Annie Hughes is LBC's crime correspondent, hosts the Crime Agents podcast. He has that exclusive, and there will be a documentary available later today on the LBC app, on the LBC website, so keep an eye on that Andy Hughes exclusive report and documentary later on the LBC app. Andy, thank you. 14 after 8. Let's bring into the conversation Dr. Mark Kerr, who's CEO of the Children's Homes Association. If I can start, Doctor, with just a reaction to the report my colleague has just filed. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Nick, and thanks for having me again. I'm absolutely staggered and shocked, as you know, those of us who are committed to protecting children and changing their lives. This is our worst nightmare coming true. We obviously, the Children's Home Association, only represents members in that are regulated by Ofsted. And first and foremost, this is about keeping children safe. And the system has clearly failed. But Alice is not, as your details have highlighted. She's not a one-off. This is a problem both sides of the border. And interestingly, this case highlights that it was a Welsh local authority placing a child in England. And it's kind of bitterly ironic that today, April the 1st, the Wales legislation comes in to end the use of, within the next 4 years, of regulated children's homes, about 80% of them.
Mark, so I have to say, until my colleague Andy's report, I didn't know about this issue of so-called unregistered care homes. Do we have any idea of how many there are, and indeed how to tackle this problem, Mark?
Yes, no, absolutely, and I don't think we should be using that. The words unregulated makes everybody feel a little bit more comfortable. The truth is they are illegal. They are unlawful settings. We've been campaigning for several years now to address this. The government refuses to work with us to address this, and to a certain extent, so does the regulator. But we had two pieces of data from last year in England. The Children's Commissioner found 669 children in illegal homes, and Ofsted themselves, who are responsible for enforcing and ensuring these illegal homes don't exist, themselves found 680.
What needs to be done? Cases such as Alice and the many others that might even be going on as we speak, Mark?
We need more of a focus. There's such a lack of interest at macro politics level. You yourself have admitted that you weren't aware of the scale of this. Mm-hmm. It is a very dark underbelly of our public services. The government needs to work with us, the rest of the sector, to address this, because the biggest fear for the regulated sector is actually the regulator. The government is kind of on an ideological journey at the moment, announced 10,000 more foster carers, which we don't believe will happen, and sometimes they're not even suitable. So the government needs a real wake-up call from this case.
And lastly, let's call them illegal. You're right, unregistered, unregulated. It doesn't get anywhere near what's going on. It is an illegal activity. Have you made any representations to members of this government or previous governments about this?
Weekly basis, pretty much.
Oh, great.
For 4 years, we worked very closely with the Department for Education, and I'm happy to say today that we are about to apply for a judicial review on the Welsh Government over their policy failures. And in England, we are trying to have constructive conversations with the Department for Education. But I think the fact that Ofsted themselves refused to give you a comment says how seriously that they're taking this.
Grateful for your time, Dr. Mark Kerr. Thank you. You're CEO of the Children's Homes Association. I will point you again to the LBC app where you can see, because all of that report has been filmed by my colleague Andy Hughes, and we'll make a documentary. Well, how can you react to no one's... I mean, someone's just going to say this is appalling. What seems awful is that that particular association have been trying to talk to governments, plural, for 4 years. Why is no one listening? We'll take your calls on that. And in other news, children and young adults are incentivised to get an ADHD or autism diagnosis due to a medicalisation of distress. That's a government inquiry. We'll get into that in more detail after the 8:17 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is to give an update from Downing Street on cost of living pressures as a result of the Iran war. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC that she will step in and stop retailers using the conflict to inflate everyday prices. And council tax, water, broadband and phone bills are among those going up across Britain from today. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A2 remains closed westbound between the tollgate services and Pepper Hill. Now, it's following an accident and there are severe delays all the way back onto the M2. The M25 is very busy clockwise at Junction 6 at Godstone. That's following an accident where one lane is closed. The A40 remains closed both ways between the Marylebone Flyover and the Northern Roundabout because of the ongoing bridge works. And also on the A40, it's very busy eastbound from the Greenford Flyover to Perivale as some emergency works are taking place here as well. On the trains, on London Overground, no Suffragette line services running between Gospel Oak and Upper Holloway. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line and minor on the Circle.
This is LBC.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Okay, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life?
We're doing pretty muddy.
It's an obstacle course.
There's one for kids.
Runners.
Walkers.
Book clubbers.
Knit clubbers.
Tenpin bowlers.
Choir singers.
Lake swimmers.
Gardeners.
Whether you climb it.
Slide it.
Or crawl it.
Go all in against cancer.
All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up now and save 50% off entry to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event. Search Race for Life. Discount ends April 19th, 2026. T's and C's apply.
Here's a tale of two commuters. Steve was in a rush and needed to park near the station. Jane also needed a space and booked in advance with Your Parking Space. Steve had a meeting at 9 and panic at 8. Nowhere to park. Jane, she's already in the office and enjoying that morning latte. With Your Parking Space, you can browse thousands of spaces across London and reserve the perfect one instantly. Get £10 off your first booking. Download the Your Parking Space app today.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on your reactions to that truly shocking report that we've just heard. Anne in Haywards Heath. Now, Anne, you work in this field, it says.
I've been a councillor for many years.
I didn't know that. Right, go ahead.
No, I have. But why was I? Because of my work with children and my family and families. And I've been on children's committees. And I've always been angry that so many children are taken into care. Why is that happening?
In some instances, isn't it, for the Children's Protection Act?
Mothers weren't sent out of hospital before they knew how to hold a baby. Mm. What I really must say, Nick, is the system I saw in Ireland, in Belfast. Every month, a new mother was visited, and maybe dad might be home, he might be mentally ill, alcoholic, whatever. But every month, that family had somebody come to visit to help them to develop the baby and watch how the baby grew. Now, I have asked many mothers, have they seen anybody? The health visitors, it's few and far between. And our services for children are poor. And I've worked with so many families who've lost their children when good support would have helped them to parent.
Anne, thank you for the work we're doing. We'll take more calls on that. Let's come to another story. Very serious, not on the same gravity of illegal care homes, but nevertheless a serious story involving our children. And the suggestion, this is the second lead on front page of one of the newspapers today, children and young adults are incentivised to get an ADHD or autism diagnosis, and there's been a medicalisation of distress. An interim report for the government, commissioned by Health Secretary Wes Streeting, found there are incentives to seek a diagnosis as it is the gateway to unlock access to special adjustments at school or at work. The report speaks of, and I quote, credible evidence of increasing psychological distress, close quotes, behind a rise in mental health diagnoses. Now, this is something that's been a live debate for some time, the idea that you go out and ensure that you can get an ADHD or autism diagnosis for your child or your children because you sense it will help them get better education, help them get other measures. And I've not even talked about what might happen in the workplace. So is this, as has often been a sort of urban myth, as it were, is this proof that it's reality? Henry Shelford is CEO of ADHD UK and joins me now. As I say, Mr. Shelford, it has been an urban myth. It's been the stuff of many conversations on this radio show, many on television shows and newspaper articles. Have we suddenly learnt the truth, in your view? Good morning.
Good morning. And no, it's an absolute nonsense, this idea that we seem to be getting penalised for wanting to get recognition. So I have ADHD myself, was diagnosed around 10 years ago. No chance getting picked up as a kid because we didn't recognise it formally in the NHS till the year 2000 for children, 2008 for adults. And what we're seeing now is a catch-up of people getting a diagnosis. And we know from a study of 8 million GP records that only 0.32% of the population have a diagnosis of ADHD versus an incidence rate of 3 to 4%. So the idea that there's overdiagnosis is absolute nonsense. The idea that we can get overdiagnosis when we've got a wait time of over, an average wait time of over 8 years for an adult, over 4 years for a child, to achieve overdiagnosis, that is just ridiculous. And the idea that there is an incentive to get a diagnosis, for absolute sure. Because you can only get ADHD medication and that kind of support if you've got a diagnosis. You have to see a specialist. You can't get it through your GP. And the idea of, you know, when we've got a healthcare gap, like, it's like saying women looking for HRT support is medicalising the menopause, or dementia diagnosis is medicalising old age. It's not. ADHD is only diagnosed if it's having a debilitating impact on your life. It's not the normal experience.
Mr. Shelford, as the report points out, the number of people diagnosed has more than doubled in 5 years. Why would that be?
It would be because we've not been diagnosing at all before the year 2000, but like we've had fundamentally got a catch-up going on at the moment. People are becoming aware that they've got ADHD, but for the first time we're having a conversation about it, and that's then enabling people to recognise themselves and come forward, and that's the big change. So it's a catch-up. We should be celebrating it. We celebrate it around other things, for example HRT and increases in that is celebrated, but for ADHD diagnosis, whenever we see an increase, people go, oh my gosh, stuff's going wrong.
If we look at the people who make up this panel, you're probably aware, Peter Fonagy, who's a clinical psychologist at the University College of London, Sir Simon Wesley, former president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, Gillian Baird, a consultant paediatrician, and they talk about a medicalisation of distress. That's not something to celebrate, is it?
So that is different. So that's talking around mental health instances and distress. It's not talking around an ADHD diagnosis. So they've been very clear that the prevalence rate of ADHD has stayed static.
Incentivization to get that diagnosis that then leads to a medicalisation of distress is what the government inquiry says. I mean, you're at the front line. You just don't hold with us at all.
The point on distress is different. On the point of ADHD, there's no ifs or buts. Everyone who has a healthcare issue goes to their doctor looking for help, and that's what we do. There's a massive healthcare gap for ADHD. We're catching up now. Yeah, there's an incentive to get healthcare, but if you've got something wrong with you, that shouldn't be penalised.
Do you agree that one in five children or young people in England, have a mental disorder?
Not an area I can talk to directly because my expertise and knowledge is around ADHD.
It's almost 20%. Do you not think that's extraordinary, that including ADHD and other issues, they have some kind of disorder?
So what, something around ADHD, that same study of 8 million GP records, it showed that the increase in depression and anxiety was roughly double for people with ADHD. It also showed the average lifespan for a woman with ADHD is 9 years younger than their peers. And for a man, so me, with ADHD, I'm on average will die 7 years younger than my peers.
And why is that? Do we know?
We actually don't know. We know, we can see the increase in those mental health issues around anxiety, depression. We also see increases in heart disease, in diabetes, in respiratory conditions, but we don't know the formal link. But it is, you know, we know ADHD is tough. Like, we know most hard through the suicide figures. We know that 1 in 10 men or boys with ADHD will at some point try and take their own life, 4 times baseline. And it's 1 in 4 women or girls. 1 in 4 with women or girls with ADHD will at some point try and take their own life. That's 7 times baseline. So this review is looking at a much wider scale. On ADHD, it's very clear. We have a static prevalence, an increased amount of diagnosis, but still very much catching up, and a real need.
Okay, lastly, we've talked about children. In the workplace, this report says that there are incentives or adjustments that can be made in the workplace. Are you aware of what they are? And again, how do you react to that suggestion?
So there is an issue that because there's huge wait times, people are going to their workplace saying, I think I've got ADHD, but I'm not sure. And the diagnosis is the only way to truly know. And we do need to look at this, because otherwise what the government's suggesting is that we're not going to be able to get a diagnosis. So what is it? We're left with a diagnosis on TikTok. And there is problems, and it's been well documented. Social media has, and TikTok has wonderful, very informative things. It also has absolute nonsense. And you do see some people identifying with those things and thinking they have ADHD. And ADHD is only diagnosed if it has a debilitating impact on your life. So if you're going, oh, I think I might have ADHD, but I'm okay, well, then you don't have ADHD.
Right.
And so for workplaces, trying to differentiate between people who think they might have it and don't, and trying to put in adjustments that might help them, then diagnosis is essential.
All right. I'm grateful for your time. Thank you, Henry Shelford, your CEO of ADHD UK, and we may well pick up on that with a conversation later, but certainly coming up after the news. In my day, it's called steaming. Now it's called a link-up. It's where hundreds of teenagers are sent on a store or stores, in many instances, so they can go robbing. It was Marks and Spencer's in Clapham on the weekend. And we'll bring you a full report on that after this. It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer's expected to give an update from Downing Street later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. Separately, President Trump says US attacks on Iran could end very soon, suggesting a timeline of 2 to 3 weeks. The business secretary has told Nick this morning that ministers are monitoring rising energy prices carefully going into the autumn. Forecasts suggest that bills could rise by £288 in July due to a spike in wholesale costs because of the conflict in the Middle East. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. LBC weather: outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents.
Just as Donald Trump has decided to slag off Britain again, the King has announced he's definitely going ahead with a state visit. Why don't we just tell Trump to buzz off?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! What would you like from your investing app? 6% interest on your ISA, a free share of your choice, or no commission on stocks and ETFs up to €100,000 per month? With XTB, you get all of the above all in one app. The XTB app. Get your free share and start investing with XTB today. XTB, where your money works.
Capital at risk. Investment values can rise or fall. Limited free stock availability. 2% ISA rate boost for 90 days. New clients only. T's and C's apply.
The weather's warmer, the days are longer, and the savings are even better in the Hillary's Spring Sale. Right now, there's up to 40% off hundreds of made-to-measure styles. Plus, get an extra 10% off everything in our flash event, including our total blackout blinds for complete darkness and a good night's sleep. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, an extra 10% off everything ends the 13th of April. Conditions apply.
Calling
creatives. It's time to get prepped for the journalism industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Molly, a journalism student in Year 12.
Outside of the classroom, we run our own news platform called The Loop. I do a daily news bulletin and produce videos for socials. We learn everything we need to be a journalist and have even learned alongside the news team at Global.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in Years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It is a government inquiry or a government commissioned inquiry or interim report that says children are incentivised to get ADHD and autism diagnosis. Something that I said to my contributor there has been the talk of many, many conversations that you and I have had. You've seen debates on television, you've read newspaper articles. Is that the reality? Mums and dads determined to say, my child has got ADHD, my child is autistic. He, she needs extra time in lessons. They need access to a laptop or whatever it might be. Is that the reality? The interim report, well, certainly seems to be hinting that it is. Amy's in Barnet. Amy, your reaction. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick.
What can you tell me on this story?
So I work in healthcare as well. I work in a high street pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And in terms of children being, there is a massive rise in children as young as 3, 4 being diagnosed with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I've been told by parents that they're trying to, I don't know if they're incentivized, but parents that need additional help from the government in terms of whether it's extra childcare vouchers or tax breaks or benefits. If your child, if your child is diagnosed with ADHD or autism, they get extra benefits on top of their universal credit for them to help them cope with everyday life. So I know loads of parents that are trying to go down that route because it gives them an extra bit of money to help with the cost of living or any additional funding that they need.
How common is it then when you're doing your work in the pharmacy and you come face to face with some of these folks? How common do you think this is?
So I think it's a lot more common than people make out. A lot of the diagnosis is from like children and adults mental health services, which are overstretched. So you've got parents, you know, complaining of the wait times of getting an ADHD diagnosis for their kids. Obviously they've got to get the diagnosis first, hoping their GP will take over the care. But, you know, you sometimes think that, I don't know, it's really easy to say that. I don't think every, like, it's more than 1 in 5. I know what you were saying with your previous caller, 1 in 5.
That's what this commission is suggesting, yeah.
I would say if there was like about 10 kids that were about 7 to 8 years old, just because they're not listening or something like that, you know, about 6 of them, maybe even 6 out of 10 of them would be diagnosed as having ADHD. I think it's just a 6-year-old being a 6-year-old. I've got a 6-year-old girl myself. And, you know, just because you don't listen to the parents, your job is to be a child. I don't think it's ADHD all the time.
Amy, thank you for your experiences, as I say, on the front line. We'll have more calls on that. Francesca, I'm going to talk to you about care homes. But let's go to another story. And what do we make of the continual assurances from people such as the Mayor of London, Sir Sadiq Khan, that we're living in a city where crime is being beaten and that it's a safe city in which to live? When we look at events in Clapham over the last few days, now the Marks and Spencers on Clapham High Street was looted by what's called a link-up, or I used to call it steaming in my days, as people descended on the Marks and Spencers on the first day of the Easter holiday. And again, this took place yesterday with hundreds of people being barricaded inside shops as teenagers ran amok in the same area. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight joins us from Clapham. Fraser, morning, what you got?
Nick, good morning. It's the second time in a week that a huge crowd of teenagers has brought mayhem to Clapham High Street. Hundreds ran through the area here last night, some in masks, others on bikes, after online calls, as you say, for a link-up leading to looting, alleged assaults, and shops forced to lock their doors for safety.
Oh, no. Is this what... Look at this. Allah, they got him.
Why is he staying?
Videos online showed bikes being ridden into the Sainsbury's, drinks being smashed off the shelves in M&S, a barricade of police trying to stop the crowds at McDonald's, and small fires reportedly being set on nearby Clapham Common. People here this morning are describing it as being highly intimidating and questioning why.
We saw a swarm of like 1,000 young guys and girls.
So we diverted.
So then we diverted and went a different way. And then on the way back, we diverted a different way again. And then we got home and saw it all on Besser Clapham and all the Instagram.
How did it feel, the atmosphere around it?
Oh, intimidating, for sure.
Yeah, it was a bit tense.
I wasn't here, but I think they ran into M&S. I don't know. I think they went in and they were knocking stuff over. That's what they were doing on Saturday anyway. They may have been doing the same again yesterday, but I don't know. I wasn't in Clapham at that time. They're bored. They're bored and they're doing it for the TikTok or whatever they're looking to do it for.
It's a bit sad to see, really, because I kind of feel like it might be a response to anti-gentrification. Having seen the videos, it is quite overwhelming. I showed one of the videos to my mum, she doesn't live here, but she was like, oh my God, it's just gangs of youth and they're just kind of like pushing their way and forcing their way through the shops and trying to steal stuff. It's just not on.
Now, at least two teenage girls were arrested here last night on suspicion of assaulting an emergency worker, while on Saturday, after similar scenes, we're told three were taken into custody for shoplifting and assault. Nick, the shops are back open this morning, with an increasingly familiar sight on the high street these days of security guards on all of the doors. But we are just days into the Easter holidays, and there is a concern from police that more of these so-called link-ups could pop up elsewhere.
LBC's Fraser Knight reporting from the back of a motorbike in Clapham. Link-ups, that's what they're called now. It used to be called steaming. Have you witnessed those? And one of the people with whom Fraser spoke, well, the kids are bored. Well, I got bored in my days when I was a teenager, but I didn't go around robbing Sainsbury's and Marks and Spencer's. So what's causing that? Let's talk about care homes, that exclusive report you heard about 40 minutes or so ago, a little under 40 minutes ago. Francesca's in Banbury. Francesca, what did you take from that rather shocking report? Good morning.
Yes, hi. Good morning, Nick. Thanks for taking my call. I'm trying to understand this. So we have unregistered or unregulated care homes. So I'm assuming that these poor kids come from councils or local authorities. So if that is the case, why is it that the councils, local authorities are not making checks on these care homes to make sure that they are registered or regulated?
Well, if you take the words of the gentleman who's the CEO of the Children's Care Society with whom we spoke, it's just an easy way to palm them off the books. They just ship them from Wales to Durham or Durham to somewhere. That's effectively right. What happens.
It's shocking, isn't it?
You would think
the councils would make checks, wouldn't you, before they put them into these homes. They should know whether or not the home is registered, therefore has to work to a certain standard. Therefore, on that assumption, those kids should get the best care. I'm just bowled over by that. That's kind of stopped me in my tracks this morning, and I just thought I'd mention it to you.
And I'm grateful, and that's what news is all about. And I say again, when that documentary is ready, although it will be distressing, of course, distressing viewing, it will be on the LBC app. It'll be available at LBC online sometime this afternoon. Let's try and get a better sense of a publication time for that. Francesca, you will not be alone in your reaction, I'm sure. Thank you for that. 8:40. Let's talk about ADHD and an interim report from an inquiry commissioned by the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, talking about children and young adults being incentivised to get a diagnosis of autism or ADHD. Louise is in Woking. Louise, your reaction to that? Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Grand, thank you.
Good to speak to you.
Yes.
So I'm a teaching assistant in a primary school.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see that there's a lot more diagnoses in ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I do think they're warranted. Being a teaching assistant, it's my job,
mm-hmm.
To take these children and, you know, help them understand these little things,
right.
Do social stories, all that kind of stuff.
Tell me what you do. What's a social story? What does that mean?
So, if they haven't got the social skills, which is part of ADHD or the spectrum.
Yep.
If they haven't made the right choices on the playground, we then pull them in as a punishment, but we just go through, how could you have done this better?
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel? How do you think that person felt when you were doing that? All that kind of stuff.
Typically, what reactions... how often are they able to give rationale for their actions?
I think where I've been with my class now for a couple of years, they know me well enough and they can be like, oh, yeah, OK, I could have done that differently, even though they are 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of the Cinco team as well. So,
special educational needs.
Yeah. So I kind of see where they're coming from and try to understand it as best I can.
What would you tell the people who are doing this report? Are they right?
Well, like I said to your
my
team
colleague.
Earlier, I do feel like sometimes people push for these diagnoses.
And what does it get them? I mean, I don't know. But I read that it might get them extra time for exams and possibly, is it access to laptops
which
or something?
Which is fair.
Yeah, of course. No, absolutely.
Fair.
But then every parent, well, a lot of parents are going to think, well, hold on, if I can get extra time for my child in an exam, I want that too. Surely a
absolutely.
Lot of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if they're diagnosed or, like, dyslexic, dyscalculia, all that kind of stuff, they will get extra time and sometimes they're scribed for. So I get that completely. But there are some parents I have kind of come across that are just, oh, I'm going to push this, I'm going to push this, I'm going to push this.
And they would do that to get the extra time?
Yeah, or perhaps, yeah, like you're saying about the, well, my child's diagnosed with ADHD, so I might get a little bit more money to help them.
Oh, I see. So this can have financial impact as well, can it?
Obviously, I'm not completely 100%.
No, sure.
So I wouldn't like to confirm nor deny. But I think once I got a diagnosis, easier to then go, you know, I've got these children that have these additional needs.
Louise, thank you. Let's pick up on that idea now. Thank you, Louise. Good luck with the work you do. Alex is in Southampton. Alex, what do you think of them? Why would parents use that system?
Well, the idea I wanted to suggest is just the hypothesis that maybe the increase that we're seeing isn't specifically just an uptick in overdiagnosis, but more so we're aware of these symptoms now, and thus we're able to identify them better.
Well, it could be if you go looking for something more, you're going to find more. That is the obvious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The idea that we've increased mammary screening.
We're going to
in
find
the past
yeah,
10
exactly
years,
right. Yeah.
Exactly. And the cancer diagnosis for breast cancer has drastically increased. And the idea that all of a sudden we've had a massive uptick in cancer incidence is a bit preposterous in that regard. And possibly that's what we're seeing here.
If I take you back to your school days, okay, I remember that I was in a junior school or prep school, and there were 15 pupils in my class, and one of them I now recognise was autistic or ADHD. I won't say his name; it's not appropriate, but I remember it to this day. Now, by the rationale or ratio today, there should be 3 in every class of 15. So, if we take the school rugby first 15, 3 of those young people are going to be autistic or ADHD. Do you believe that number?
It would make sense from my experience. I'm about 26 in a minute, so
yep.
You know, school wasn't too far off from me.
Right.
I myself had a diagnosis with a learning difficulty. It wasn't
okay. And in your class, do you mind my asking how many pupils, just roughly, were in your class? Was it sort of 15, 20, whatever it might be?
Yeah, I was about 25, roughly.
Right. 5 children would have had these sort of issues, do you think?
Yeah, quite easily.
Okay. Alex, we've got to go because I'm late to the news. Grateful for your input. Have yourself a great day. Thank you. Coming up after news, you'll hear from this man.
What a mess we're in now. Goodness me. I can't remember how many U-turns. Bad idea. Unpopular. Unworkable. Unjust.
And the unmissable former Labour MP, now suspended, Carl Turner, joins me after the news. At 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister's expected to give an update from Downing Street later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. The Business Secretary has told Nick that ministers are monitoring rising energy prices carefully going into the autumn. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise to Junction 6 at Godstone. It's because of an accident where one lane is closed. Also delays on the A2 westbound heading up towards the tollgate services. And that was following an accident, although all the lanes have just reopened. It's slow back onto the M2. Also delays continue in West London on the A40 eastbound. It's slow heading from the Greenford flyover to Perivale because of the emergency repair works which are taking place right near to the Hoover building. And also the A40 remains closed both ways between the northern roundabout at the West Cross Route and the Marylebone flyover. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines.
LBC.
Did you know that Tesco does home insurance? And you can get club card prices on the house. What? You didn't know? Shut the front door. Over 500,000 people already have Tesco home insurance. And it was awarded which recommended provider for home insurance in September 2025. See how much you can save with your club card. Search online for Tesco Home Insurance. Every little helps.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Isn't just another flight comparison app. When you download the Kayak app, you download flight enlightenment. With Kayak, you see things others can't, like the latest great deals from both airlines and booking sites. You can filter your searches and set up price alerts so you... Not now.
Oh, sorry.
So you're notified when there's a price drop on the flights you want. See more, do more, save more with Kayak. You can do the gong now. Download the Kayak app today and go see for yourself.
At Lidl, find your move with a new Cribbit running range. Grab a pair of carbon running shoes for only £39.99 with advanced EVA soles and carbon plates. These and other Cribbit products will get you over the line for sure. Available in store now. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only while stocks last.
Find me somebody to love.
At Dreams until Tuesday, the more you spend, the more you save with up to £500 off. Dreams. Love your bed.
This was made with human intelligence.
And artificial intelligence.
Just like Intuit QuickBooks business management software. If you're a sole trader earning over 50K from April 2026, making tax digital means...
You have to file your taxes online.
But new QuickBooks AI has...
Automated tools to help make compliance easier.
I was going to say that. I'll do it with Intuit QuickBooks.
When you're smiling...
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine, we'll come back to our conversation about parents seeking to gain medicalisation and getting drugs or whatever is necessary for autism and ADHD. But I've already said that this outspoken man is returning. I speak of the former, now suspended Labour MP, Carl Turner. He joined us back in February after that disastrous Labour by-election in Gorton and Denton.
Well, you turning on that, you turning on this. I've lost count, I don't read the parliamentary Labour Party briefs. I stopped reading them 10 minutes after I was elected in May 2010. Stop picking things from daftness, of the daftest daftness you've ever heard in your life. Just can't keep up with it. It's making my head hurt.
To widespread acclaim, I'm delighted to say Carl Turner returns, but with the distressing news, he's been suspended by the Labour Party. Now, there are various rationale or reasons running at this time, Mr. Turner. Is it because you spoke with Jodie McIntyre, who stood against the Labour MP Jess Phillips? Is it because you opposed David Lammy's jury legislation that you or I discussed? Or is it because you had rather disobliging comments about Morgan McSweeney, who you know as Morgan McSwindle? Which is it, Mr. Turner? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I blame you, actually, Nick, because that interview we did went viral, and I suspect that was probably the beginning of the end, as
it were. But let's hope it's going to be, the whip is going to be restored at some point in the not too distant
future. How can I make it up to you, Carl? What do I need to do? How can I help you on this occasion?
Look, I think this, Nick, in relation to what's happened, I think I'm suspended, frankly, because of the jury stuff. I think that's the truth of it. There was an Opposition Day debate, I think, on the 7th of January. I obviously voted against the government. That was a breach of the whip. I think, frankly, under the previous chief whip, I would have gone at that point. I would have potentially be suspended at that point. That didn't happen. I received a conduct letter, I think, on the 22nd of January. I asked the chief whip at that point, what is the conduct you're speaking of? Tell me what it is I need to do to improve. There was nothing coming back. And unfortunately, we end in the situation where I've now got my solicitor instructed, asking the chief whip, what is it? I've seen Peter Kyle on the media round this morning. I don't think he had an answer to the question, but he was asked about it. There's been mention of disparaging remarks. I have no clue. Who are these colleagues? Come forward, make the complaint. Let me know what it is I've done to offend. I'll try my best to put it right. But at the moment, I know nothing.
Do you think we are being treated as fools, as you alleged earlier?
Well, look, I think the reality of what's happened with me is a terribly unfortunate happening. I've been a loyal Labour MP for 16 years. I've never voted against the government, apart from on that one occasion we speak about on the 7th of January this year. So I think it's a very unfortunate situation to be in. I mean, joking apart, I'm very disappointed, I have to tell you. But look, they've not told me what the reason is. I did do an interview with somebody who I thought was an independent journalist, who it transpired was the candidate against Jess Phillips. I messaged Jess. I apologised for that when she raised it with me. That is the reality. I told the guy in question, I think he'd misrepresented me. This is guy who was being an independent journalist. There's no course of action you can take. If it was Nick Ferrari, I could take it up with you. Unfortunately, there's no standards for him to adhere to. That's the truth. I've made a terrible error. But I've not had my mobile phone nicked with WhatsApp messages on it, have I?
What do you see as your political future? Do you want to be welcomed back into the bosom of the Labour Party?
I was rather hopeful that you might offer me a job on LBC, because as I told you last time I was on, my political career was going down the pan. I didn't realise how fast it was going down the pan. But there we are, Nick. That's where I find myself. It's regrettable. Look, I'd like to get back into the fold. I'm a Labour MP. I was born Labour, Nick. I had very little choice. It was rammed down our throats as kids. My father was a trade unionist. My mother was a trade unionist. The Labour Party is the nearest thing I've got to a religion. I mean, I want to be back in the Labour fold. But I'm not going to kowtow, and I'm not going to start doing as I'm told on juries, because it's the worst idea that any government of any political persuasion could have ever come up with. It's barmy, and it won't work, Nick. Honestly.
What's your message to Sir Keir as we see the local elections looming on the horizon, Carl Turner?
Nick, I've always been supportive of Keir. I really have. I think he's doing a good job on the international front. I think he's stood up to Trump. I think that's imperative. I think that will stand us in good stead for these local elections. But I do worry about what our chances are in Wales and Scotland. Anas Sarwar's worked his socks off for many years in the run-up to this election against what is a failing SNP government. I think it'd be disappointing if we don't take control in Scotland and retain control in Wales. We're going to lose seats in England, but let's hope it's mitigated by the fact that we've got lots of good activists, loyal Labour Party members going out there religiously, banging on doors and putting leaflets through doors and saying vote Labour. That's what I'll be doing, Nick. I'm still a member of the Labour Party.
The man is not for Turnering. The reviews are in. Joe in Kent, please give Carl Turner a slot on the radio. Glenn, what a great bloke. Cat, I'm no Labour voter, but I'd vote for this man. The reviews are in. Carl Turner, you're a star. Thank you for your time this morning. Former, now suspended Labour MP for East Hull, but the man is not for Turnering. Carl Turner wants to get back into the Labour fold. Thank you for your time on that. 4 to 9. So what about parents who are gaming the system to get an ADHD or autism diagnosis? Anika in Manchester, what do you say to that suggestion, Anika? Good morning.
Good morning. Hiya. Thank you for having me on. First-time caller.
How lovely to have you. Nervous. Great.
I just wanted to give sort of an alternative viewpoint. So my son has not been diagnosed with a neurodivergence, albeit we are very much supported by our local council, our school, et cetera, who understand that he probably does have some form of neurodivergence. But I wanted to explain...
Why do you say that? What are the symptoms, if I may call them those?
So it was pretty evident. So I have two children, and from the age of about 2.5, there was something not quite right. It wasn't just terrible twos, it was catastrophic twos, if you want to call it that.
Right.
And we're now nearly 10 down this journey, but we have regular episodes of dysregulation, which means we have total whiteouts, or redouts, if you want to call them that. We've had incidences where he's had to be carried into school by his arms and his legs.
How healthy is it to... I mean, I would never tell someone how to parent, but is that the right thing to do for your child if they're in distress?
There isn't. I don't know is the answer, because if anybody wishes to have an ADHD label because they've seen it on TikTok, I can tell you it's not much fun. It's debilitating. It's isolating. As a parent, you have to be 10 steps ahead of what your child's doing. It affects their friendships. It affects his speech, because he has a stutter now that has developed. Anyone that thinks ADHD is something that's fun to have because they've seen it on TikTok hasn't lived with ADHD. We have had, I won't go into too much detail, but we have been put in crisis as a family because of the things that he does. He can sometimes hurt himself. And that is not fun. It's not a fun place to be. And we're still sat somewhere on a waiting list while, there's people being diagnosed left, right and centre. I don't intend to take a penny from anybody for anything.
Yours is very moving testimony. If you were called to give evidence to this inquiry that produced the interim report, briefly, what would you tell them?
I'd just tell them that families like mine need help. I need help as a mum. I don't wish to look at my child and say, oh, here's a nice label for him. You know, that will tick every box and make things better. I know that a label will never make his symptoms or presentation go away.
I must leave it there. I'm afraid I have to go away as you hear the music starts. Anika, a lot of people are responding to what you've said, and we will return to this conversation. Look after him. Thank you, Anika, for your input. Now, in other news, as President Trump tells the United Kingdom to go and get their own oil, he's insisting that he will be coming out of Iran soon, with or without a deal.
It's not like you're taking out an army or you're taking out a country. That's not for us. That'll be for whoever's using the strait.
Plus, in other news...
Founded by two college dropouts operating out of Steve Jobs' parents' garage, last year it was worth $4 trillion. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, looking at 50 years of Apple.
And if you didn't get your call to air concerning that ADHD and autism story, we will return to that later in the next hour as well. But the 9 o'clock news on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the Prime Minister is expected to give an update later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer's Downing Street press conference is expected to cover both the conflict and household support. It's as the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has told LBC that she won't stand by and allow retailers to use the conflict to hike prices. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has more details.
The Chancellor has told LBC that she will protect working people from the war in Iran and will shield the public from unfair price rises. It comes as many bills, including water, council tax, telelicenses and others, will be going up this week.
You can read the Chancellor's exclusive comments on the LBC app. The Business Secretary has insisted that households are being adequately protected from spiking energy costs due to the war. Forecasts by Cornwall Insight suggest that bills could rise by £288 in July due to increasing wholesale costs. Speaking to Nick, Peter Kyle dismissed suggestions that current support on offer will be simply wiped out and won't make a difference.
You're taking one estimate from one consulting company
that is into the future. We are acting today to make sure that we get a grip on the family finances and ensure that we get a grip on the challenges from the cost of living. We are also, as you heard from the Chancellor, looking very carefully at the autumn period when we know that there may well be challenges in the system.
An LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. In one case, a 15-year-old girl was sexually abused by two staff members at a home in County Durham. Our crime correspondent, Andy Hughes, confronted the owner of the now closed firm.
I asked them on the inquiry and I said, was there anything I could have done to have stopped this? And the police officer, he said, no, Paul.
I'll tell you how you could have stopped it. Looking into these and not employing two convicted criminals to look after the most vulnerable children in society. That's how you could have prevented it, Paul.
The Department for Education says providers operating outside of the law face serious consequences. There's more on this story on the LBC app. A man is due to appear in court after seven people were injured when a car hit pedestrians in Derby on Saturday. Sandhu Ponachan, who's 36 and from the city, is facing charges including grievous bodily harm with intent. And the NHS in England is to prescribe the weight loss jab Wegovy to more than a million overweight patients at risk of heart attacks. The health watchdog NICE has recommended the drug, saying it offers a extra layer of protection. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 172 at 10,349. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, some cloud in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
It's the cinematic event of the year. Critics are saying a stunning, breathtaking triumph of savings. It's 2-for-1 cinema tickets from Compesa Market in cinemas all year.
That sounds like a great movie.
Sergey, it's no movie. It's 2-for-1 offer on cinema tickets.
Oh, yeah. I knew that.
Get 2-for-1 cinema tickets every Tuesday or Wednesday with the Compesa Market app. The simplest way to save.
When you take out a qualifying product to Compesa Market, one membership per year participating cinemas, two standard tickets only, cheap as free. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after nine, Wednesday, April the 1st. As President Trump tells the United Kingdom, quotes, go get your own oil on social media, has he exposed a rather inconvenient truth for the British government? We don't seem to have a plan. We don't really know what we're going to do in the Strait of Hormuz. We don't really know what we're going to do with our own energy bills. I remind you, Prime Minister speaking in around an hour's time. We'll look at that in more detail. In other governmental matters, Britain and France have approved a 2-month extension to the multi-million pound migrant patrols deal. Yes, that French deal that's proved so fruitful is back in place, and it will cost £16.5 million to keep it in place until the end of next month. Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood addressed the issue last month.
There is no denying that we meet at a difficult time for my party. It is a time when who we are and what we stand for is contested.
The government-commissioned report that suggests there is an overdiagnosis of ADHD and autism. They're saying in an interim report, I stress interim, that is the reality. That was addressed by Henry Shelford. He's CEO of ADHD UK.
The idea that we can get overdiagnosis when we've got a wait time of over, an average wait time of over 8 years for an adult, over 4 years for a child, it's just ridiculous. And
plus, happy birthday. Yes, it's 50 years of Apple. We'll have a special report.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I was with some folk yesterday, and we came to the conclusion that as regards Trump and Iran, he's effectively negotiating with himself. Even he doesn't seem to know what's going to happen from one day to the next. Now, President Trump has been somewhat of a shapeshifter, as it's called in modern days, with his objectives in Iran and how the conflict is going. We take you back to almost a month, Florida, March the 9th.
We're achieving major strides toward completing our military objective. And some people could say they're pretty well complete. We've wiped every single force in Iran out very completely.
Really? We move on to the 20th of March, the US becoming increasingly mired in the Middle East. The president struck a different tone, appearing to double down on US military action in Iran.
I don't want to do a ceasefire. You know, you don't do a ceasefire when you're literally obliterating the other side. They don't have a navy. They don't have an air force. They don't have any equipment. They don't have any spotters. They don't have anti-aircraft. They don't have radar. And their leaders have all been killed.
And finally, to yesterday, President Trump insisting the U.S. will be pulling out of Iran soon, with or without a deal.
I think we're 2 or 3 weeks in. We'll leave. Because there's no reason for us to do this. Look, it's not like you're taking out an army or you're taking out a country. That's not for us. That'll be for whoever's using the strait.
Freddie Gray, deputy editor of The Spectator magazine, edits the U.S. edition and joins me now. What have we learned about the alliance or the friendship between the United Kingdom and the United States over the past almost month or so? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think we've learned that it's not in very good health. Donald Trump, to a certain extent, has exposed great vulnerabilities, strategic vulnerabilities, power vulnerabilities for Europe and for Britain in particular, on our energy and on our military. We are no longer a serious military power, and that has been rather embarrassingly revealed. To say that Trump's done us a favour, as some American people do in doing so, is I think misguided. Yesterday when he talked about taking the oil, he said the hard part is done. And that's of course a lie. The hard part is not done. The hard part is securing the Strait of Hormuz if the Iranians want to keep it shut. And the Americans seem to have no way of doing that, so they are effectively cutting their losses and running. Donald Trump is meant to be giving a statement tonight, an address to the nation at 9 o'clock.
It's 2 a.m. London time. To carry on, Freddie, just to let everyone know. Yep, go ahead.
Yes, if you want to stay up for it.
You probably don't have a choice, mate. But anyway, go on.
It's possible that it will be some. This is all some giant bluff, and he will declare a ground invasion this evening. But I think what the experts are saying in Washington is that he's going to announce some kind of closure in the coming days. And people are talking about the deal maker in chief coming up with a new grand bargain. Quite what this bargain will be, it's impossible to say. I'm afraid I've spent quite a lot of the last 10 years trying to tell people that Trump is more intelligent than you realize. I think this is a case where he's probably more stupid than you realize.
A gallon of gas, north or around $4, a gallon of petrol around $4. How long has he got before that kicks into the midterms?
I think it may be too late. I mean, the polling at the moment is looking disastrous for Republicans in November. Trump's approval rating among young people, he actually did surprisingly well with young people in the 2024 election. It's now minus 50. With Hispanics, another key demographic, he's completely tanking. He promised a golden age, and the whole sort of plan for Trump too was that this year would be the year where he ushered in this golden age. The economy would boom. There would be these 250th birthday celebrations. The problem with this war is it's completely upended all of that. It's made everybody anxious about the economy. And America, even though it has its own amazing energy abundance, it is vulnerable to the global economy, as every country is. And can he extract himself from it magically in the next few weeks? If he does, it will be one of the greatest political feats of all time, and never put anything past Donald Trump. But at the moment, he's in a really, really tough bind. And I think, although he'll never admit it, he knows it.
Lastly, was his head turned by what would be the apparent ease of the Venezuela operation?
I think so. I think generally he's become far more comfortable with military action in his second term. And he enjoys the theatre. He enjoys the statements after a military action. And he learned back in his first term that the first time he ever got a nice treatment from the big TV networks that don't like him was when he bombed Syria. And I think as his leadership has gone on, he's become much, much more comfortable with this role of kind of warrior-in-chief.
Freddie, thank you. Freddie Gray, deputy editor of The Spectator magazine, editor of the US edition. I would imagine you will have to get some sleep because you will be up at 2 in the morning, 2 a.m. London time for that address. Let's bring into the conversation Anthony Gardner, who served as US ambassador to the European Union under President Obama and joins me now. Mr. Ambassador, when I say that at times President Trump seems to be negotiating with himself, is that a fair characterization? Good morning.
Good morning. Sorry, Nick, could you repeat that? I just lost you on the line.
At times it would appear the president is negotiating with himself, Mr. Yes. Ambassador.
Yes, look, there's no plan. That thing is shown to be pretty obvious. He has fallen in love with a shiny toy called the U.S. military, which has performed spectacularly, whatever one's views about the legality or illegality of these actions. But, yeah, he's changing his policy every 5 minutes. He first said that after hitting the U.S., the Iranian, rather, nuclear facilities, that they'd been obliterated, that he said that there was a risk of the program being put back together very quickly and a bomb being constructed and so forth. So, yes, he's negotiating with himself, and he's putting Europe at a significant risk.
He's told Britain to go and get its own oil. We are due to see our king visit your great nation later mm-hmm. this month. There are suggestions that the visit should be cancelled or postponed. There's another school of thought that actually it would appear President Trump is something of a royal fan and he might take a degree of counsel from King Charles. Where are you on that, Mr. Ambassador?
Well, look, there are two things. First, the relationship is obviously bigger than any single president. This president is not going to last forever, and hopefully we will return in the United States to some sort of
normality.
Greater normality, or if not, dare I say, sanity. I don't think he takes counsel from anyone, and this is not meant as a criticism of anyone in the government. But I don't think he listens to anyone. I don't think he really reads briefing papers. Much of what has happened was very predictable. And let's just remember the secondary impacts of what's happened. Mm-hmm. Iran and Russia are earning hundreds of millions more for their oil every day. Essential assistance that was destined for Ukraine, which is incredibly important, has been now diverted away from Ukraine. Inflation is rising. Banks are reconsidering now rate increases and so forth. Fertilizers are being subjected to substantial cuts. And gas prices are going up. So all of these things were predictable, including cutting off the Strait of Hormuz. He seems to have been surprised by some, if not all, of this. That's what's incredible to me.
Lastly, he's nothing if not a survivor. I touched briefly on the midterms with my previous contributor. Your view on that and what's happening at gas stations or petrol forecourts across the United States?
That is a very important issue for every election I can remember. I've been involved in six. And indeed, the price that Americans pay at the pump is something that is very visible. They see it every day. And many Americans, as your listeners will be well aware, drive a lot. Mm. So it is an important signal. They'll be very unhappy. Look, the signals are, for the Democrats, pretty positive in November. But let's remember, we're many months away from November. Many things can happen. But indeed, as your prior speaker has said, Democrats scored actually surprisingly poorly among the young, Latinos, African Americans, particularly males. There are signs that we can win back at least a couple percentages from what we lost. That could be very significant.
Grateful for your time, Anthony Gardner. Thank you. You served as U.S. Ambassador to the European Union under President Obama. Two questions. One is, of course, that royal visit. It is still scheduled to go. I personally believe, I think it should. I think it would send the most appalling sign if we were not to proceed with it, and perhaps the king might be able to give a word of caution or warning, I don't know. And secondly, the inconvenient truth for this government, although Trump, you just don't know what's going to happen next, but when he says go get your own oil, does it highlight the fact that we don't actually have a plan? How fair is that? We'll explore those two aspects after the 9:15 LBC News headlines, read by Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is expected to give an update from Downing Street later on cost of living concerns as a result of the Iran war. The Business Secretary has told Nick that ministers are monitoring rising energy prices carefully going into the autumn. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the A2 westbound from the tollgate services. It's because of an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are open, but it's still slow backing up to the M2. In Greenford, Sudbury Hill remains closed westbound at Harrow Road for the emergency works. On the A40, there are eastbound queues from the Greenford flyover to Perivale because of the emergency works by the Hoover Building. And then also the A40 remains closed both ways for the ongoing bridge works between the Marylebone flyover and the Northern Roundabout. Severe delays on the DLR because of a train which has broken down at West Ferry. Also, severe delays on the Metropolitan line between Moor Park and Watford, and minor delays on the Circle and Piccadilly lines.
Hear every side of the story. This is LBC.
Co-op members now get prices matched to Aldi. Hold on, no way. OK then, so co-op members now get everyday essentials priced matched to Aldi. So sign up and start saving. Co-op. Owned by you, right by you. I wasn't expecting that.
Co-op member prices matched versus comparable selected products at Aldi GB. Co-op membership required. Co-op group food stores only. See co-op.co.uk/Aldi price match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Find me somebody to love.
This Easter at Dreams, the more you spend, the more you save. With up to £500 off. Anything to add, Beds?
Oh, I do. It all ends on Tuesday, so don't get caught napping.
All good springs must come to an end.
Dreams. Love your bed.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world. Like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
This is what you're saying regarding, have we seen a lack of a plan? And what, of course, of this idea of a royal visit? This comes in from, oh, do you remember to sign up? Alf in Halifax says, you've not mentioned Venezuela and Iran. Why not mention the blockading of Cuba? This demonstrates the attitude of a great dictator. Same subject. Mark says, what we need to do is send a clear message to President Trump that if he tells if he tells us to go and get our own oil, they can go and get their own king. Charles should not visit. I'm not sure about that. Another Mark. Mark's in Truro. Mark, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Pleasure to speak to you.
Good to have you on,
just
sir.
Looking at statistics and in oil supply numbers from 2024.
Oh, yes.
When he says that... We don't act, we should go and get our own oil.
Yeah, go get your own oil. Yeah.
We, the United States is actually always has been since 2024 our primary supplier anyway. And then it comes, we've got Norway, Libya, Nigeria, and a plethora of other countries.
Are you reading this? Just so I know, this is off an official website, is it? You've got this, just so I can clarify.
This is off an official website. As far as I know, it's legitimate, yes. I think I have sent a link to your colleague.
Okay, grateful for that. Of course, the other way of looking at it, go get your own oil, is he actually saying go and drill in the North Sea?
Well, we do, but it's just the expense and everything, again, is affected by the global market. And that's why America's oil prices are affected.
We've had so many discussions of whether we should to drill or not to drill, but I don't know if you've seen Neil McCulloch, who is the chief executive of Adura, that's a joint venture between Shell and Equinor, has said that if you were to expand the Jackdaw gas field, which is 150 miles east of Aberdeen, you could have the oil flowing by October. Well, now, when Trump says, go drill, go get your own oil, is that perhaps what he's saying, Mark?
Perhaps that is what he's meaning. I mean, more oil coming from our own oil fields would surely help that market. I can't argue with that.
Can't argue with that. Mark, thanks for getting involved. Have a good day down in Cornwall. I wonder if you're going to argue with the next story we're going to have. We will have more calls on President Trump, but let's come back home and talk about Britain. And France approving a two-month extension to the multi-million-pound migrant patrols deal after negotiators failed to agree on full new terms. So it's an interim. It'll cost us £16.5 million to cover the cost of police patrolling northern France until the end of May. Now, you may be aware that we had a three-year deal. This was put together by Rishi Sunak, by the way, costing £475 million. It expired at midnight. My question is, when you look at the huge number of arrivals and continual videos that are posted of French officers, border guards, whatever they call themselves there, gendarmes, just filming these migrants as they take to sea, what have we got? Where's the value of that £475 million? Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood addressed this last month and gave an update on how many migrants have been intercepted before they cross the channel since Labour came to power.
5,000 disruptions in collaboration with our partners in France and elsewhere in Europe. We've disrupted up to 40,000 crossings being made. Obviously, crossings are still being made, so we know that that's not enough and we must go further. But we are fulfilling the policies of our manifesto.
So is that bang for the buck? £275,000 a day? Meanwhile, in a related conversation, senior Labour MP, chair of the influential Foreign Affairs Committee, Dame Emily Thornberry, posted this on social media on Monday.
For too long, we've allowed the right to own the debate on immigration. We've allowed them to say that everything wrong in life, the housing crisis, the cost of living, the employment crisis, is not because of structural issues like wealth inequality or chronic underfunding of public services, but because of immigration. We've allowed them to demonise migrants and refugees, to cast them as the enemy, and that was wrong.
Dame Emily always plays a piano when she makes these statements. A little bit of Bach, I think it might have been there, not sure. She said the tens of thousands of migrants should be given permanent residency so they can claim benefits. To David Wooding, political commentator, former political editor for The Sun on Sunday. Two aspects to discuss, David. Let's start initially with the value or otherwise of £275,000 a day to keep that deal going through the end of next month. Morning, David.
Morning, Nick. It's clearly pro rata, not much less than the £475 million we're already forking out. Yep. And in fact, £700 million since 2014. Wow. £275,000 a day, as you say, or £2 million a week. What for? To pay for police officers on France to stand smoking their Galois on the beach while another boat sets sails for the UK.
Why do we do that? What is the solution? Did Shabana Mahmood have an alternative?
Well, I think she's really clearly trying to buy a bit of time by giving it another couple of months to see if she can get a deal over the line. But the truth is, only about a third of boats were intercepted last year. And, of course, we had the highest number of boats coming to the UK ever, 41,500 last year. So it's gone up on what it was during the Conservatives. So, really, the only answer to this is to stop the pulp factor. You know, the fact is that those who are stopped by the police will only go back the next day and have another go. Yeah. And you know that they've got about a 99% chance of staying in the UK if they manage to get across the channel.
Let's talk a little bit about Dame Emily Thornberry. I don't know if you're aware about this, but we played a little bit of it there, a social media post suggesting we should effectively allow these migrants to be given permanent residency. She would say they can then obviously get into work, but I would say they can also claim benefits.
Yes, well, of course, they could get benefits in France, I guess, if they've got asylum status. She says it's the right who are winning the agenda on this. I wouldn't say it was the right wing at all. I'd say it was the vast majority of people in this country. I think polls are showing that about 70% of the population believe that migration is a big issue, and it's certainly in the top three all the time. So I think if she went to live in some of the communities that were affected by mass migration, how it's impacted on schools, hospitals, housing and other issues, then she might feel different. She needs to get out of North London a little bit, I suspect.
Lastly, David, much of the nation, not all of the nation, but much of the nation will have an opportunity to vote on political affairs with those local elections that are just over now, just over a month away. Professor Sir John Curtis wrote in one of the newspapers, the Daily Express, earlier this week, he doesn't see rosy times ahead for either of the two main parties, Labour or Conservative. How do you see those elections going?
Well, I suspect that it's going to be a fight between Reform and the Green Party, because the left are disillusioned with the Labour Party and are moving to the Greens, whether or not that'll change when they realise what the Greens really stand for. And disillusioned people who switch from the Tories to Labour, and indeed current Tory supporters, may go to Reform. So it'll be a very, very split vote.
David Whitting, political commentator, former political editor of The Sun on Sunday. Thanks for that, David. Have yourself a good weekend. Let's pick up on what you're saying. Julian in Hertfordshire, what a sickening hypocrite Dame Emily Thornberry is. She hated white van man. Opens our borders, it's a joke. That was, of course, a post she put out about a by-election, as I recall, down in Rochester in Kent, where she saw a house that had a number of union flags outside. Let's talk, though, about Donald Trump and whether he has a plan and what that should mean for the United Kingdom. Paul, I'll come to you on a migration, but Jason is in Hook and has been on the hook for a while, hanging on the line. The point you want to make about the plan or lack thereof. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Mick. Nice to speak to you. I think one of the main problems we're having is NATO, to be honest.
Go on. That's interesting.
If when Trump had gone in, NATO had backed him up with full force, I think the outcome would be different, because an army or a force divided is a force easily conquered.
How? In what way? Backed him up? What, you're not saying go in physically to Iran, are you?
No, but show support, because, like I said, a force divided is a force easily conquered.
Yes.
And I think the reason that England and NATO didn't go in, I think it's blatantly obvious. Number one, we don't have any battleships. That's quite... I mean, the people smugglers have a better Navy than we do at this point.
Yep, we found that last week on the show. Absolutely right.
And NATO doesn't have any money. But if we'd gone in full force, I think we could have done, because you have to remember, the original... one of the original points of going in was the mass killing of their own people, plus the threat of nuclear weapons.
Right, right. But when you say go in... you mean send the fleet down to the Strait of Hormuz, send a NATO fleet down? You don't mean go in as in bomb, do you? Or you do mean
no,
bomb?
No, I mean go in to show complete, full support with NATO, the Americans, saying this has to stop.
But lastly, if you'll allow that President Trump is at best mercurial, and there are other words you can use, so you never quite know which way he's going to jump, how safe or otherwise is it to back someone like that?
Well, as part of NATO, I think we should, you know, always have... or be aligned, have alliance. I mean, that is what NATO is for.
All right. Eaton, do you think Trump was right to do what Trump did?
Well, that's a double-edged sword. I mean, to be honest, the mass killing of the people in Iran, they're all very happy with this regime change, but it hasn't changed yet. And the Gulf of Hormuz, unfortunately, because the regime hasn't changed, was an unfortunate byproduct.
Jason, have safe driving. Thank you for that. Let's talk about this deal done between the UK and France. £275,000 a day, and we go to France. Paul's in Cherbourg. Paul, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Nice to speak to you, Nick. I drive. I'm a HGV driver, but drive all around Europe. I generally stay in Europe and drop trailers off. But I have, the last few days, I've gone to Cannes, and it's the, because they travel to the UK, it's the only port where they are actually checking every truck with like, they put little heat sensor bits on the back of the truck for illegal immigrants. So they are doing stuff in France now there. I don't know why in Cherbourg and in Belgium and Zeebrugge and that they don't do any checks whatsoever, but they are in Cannes.
But
so
the problem is the boats, isn't it now, Paul? Isn't that more of the issue, these so-called rubber dinghies? Isn't that the burning issue at the moment?
I don't know how many people are getting in illegally. I don't know the statistics, how many people are getting in illegally on the back of trucks.
Oh, on trucks, I think it's virtually zero now, isn't it? Because of those heat-seeking devices, heat monitors, whatever they're called. Isn't that right?
Oh, I don't know. No. All I know is that we still have to check our vehicles all the time, and there is still a lot of illegal immigrants around waiting to get into them.
When were you last in UK?
3 months ago.
Oh, wow. Have you noticed? So I was going to ask, how much is it to fill your truck up, but you're filling your truck up in France and Belgium, are you, presumably?
Oh, if you want to know about the cost of fuel prices, Germany is the most expensive at the moment. Just last week, I spent €2.60 in Germany.
Right. Is this diesel? Sorry to talk over
you. This is diesel, yeah. It's €2.09 in France, and it's €2.20 in Belgium.
I will convert those. Safe driving, Paul. Are you coming home again soon, or you live over there?
No, well, I'm based out of Ireland now, and I am actually, I'm on my way back tonight. I'm sailing back on an 18-hour ferry back to Ireland tonight.
Safe crossing. Happy Easter. Thanks for that. I'll convert those prices. It'll be interesting, and we'll give them to you after the news. Well, we'll also be coming back to that conversation about ADHD. Henry Shelford is the CEO of ADHD UK, addressing the idea that in some instances, parents are gaming the system.
It's like saying women looking for HRT support is medicalising the menopause, or dementia diagnosis is medicalising old age. It's not. ADHD is only diagnosed if it's having a debilitating impact on your life.
Plus, happy birthday. Apple, the original iPhone ringtone. 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News, Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister is to give an update from Downing Street on cost of living concerns as a result of the conflict in the Middle East. Separately, President Trump has suggested US forces could end operations in Iran within 2 to 3 weeks. Speaking to Nick, the business secretary has insisted households are being adequately protected from rising energy costs due to the war. Forecasts by Cornwall Insight suggest that bills could rise by £288 in July due to spiking wholesale costs. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with the regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
You want your car in good hands. With expertise, Halfords will keep it moving this spring with ease. You want your annual service ticked off? That's great. And in store, we'll fit batteries while you wait. You're never far from a garage or store for fitting, fixing, checks and more. You want mobile experts to fit tyres on your drive while you relax and take five to keep moving forwards with none of the fuss. You want Halfords, the name you can trust. Full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
Your time is valuable. Your perspective should be too. The Economist cuts through the noise with the stories that truly shape your world.
How can you believe that a new regime won't crush you just like the previous one?
Online scams are stranger than they've ever been.
When the world's turned upside down, know which way is up. Read, watch, or listen to The Economist.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
£275,000 a day. And as we just said, in many instances, what do we get? Video. Videos from French border guards or gendarmes. Now, I took a call there from Paul, who gave us the diesel prices, 260 and euros, 209, 220 in Germany, France and Belgium. We have converted. That's 227, 182 and 189 a litre for diesel in those respective countries. £2.27, £1.82, £1.92. So broadly, I mean, Germany is expensive. Because I think, I don't use diesel, but I'm thinking it's coming in at about 180-something and change. One, maybe hitting 190. 227. Ach du Liebezeit, as they say in Germany. On to other stories. Children and young adults are incentivised to get an ADHD or autism diagnosis. There's been a medicalisation of distress. Those direct words used from a government inquiry's interim report, put together by some people with pretty weighty CVs in this particular area. That's what they call it. We know it as possibly gaming the system. Is that the reality? Well, we discussed this in the previous hour, and here's a little of what you had to say, starting with Amy and Barnett.
I work in a high street pharmacy. There is a massive rise in children as young as 3, 4 being diagnosed with ADHD. If your child is diagnosed with ADHD or autism, they get extra benefits on top of their universal credit to help them cope with everyday life. So I know loads of parents that are trying to go down that route because it gives them an extra bit of money to help with the cost of living or any additional funding that they need.
Louise is in Woking.
I'm a teaching assistant in a primary school. I do see that there's a lot more diagnoses in ADHD, but actually I do think they're warranted. Being a teaching assistant, I have to take these children and, you know, help them understand these little things, do social stories, all that kind of stuff. If they haven't got the social skills, which is part of ADHD or the spectrum, if they haven't made the right choices on the playground, we just go through how could you have done this better? How did you feel?
Alex is in Southampton.
The idea I wanted to suggest is just the hypothesis that maybe the increase that we're seeing isn't specifically just an uptick in overdiagnosis, but more so we're aware of these symptoms now, and thus we're able to identify them better.
More of your calls in a minute. Roshani, I'll be coming to you. But let me just tell you who peoples this committee. Peter Fonagy, a clinical psychologist at University College London, is on it, as is Sir Simon Wesley, former president of the Royal College of Psychiatrists, as is Gillian Baird, a consultant paediatrician. A final report with recommendations is due before the year end, and it will have important implications for government plans to reform the SEND, Special Educational Needs and Disabilities, the welfare system, and the financial aspect too, it says here. Roshani is in Southfields. Hello, have I said your name correctly, Roshani?
Yes, you have, Nick. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
I have a 22-year-old son who has ADD, attention deficit disorder, mm-hmm. and my experience is that they absolutely do need some medication and help, you know, for focus, motivation, and it really is a condition. It's not something in people's minds. It actually affects every aspect of their lives.
How did it affect your son? Talk me through what you witnessed.
Well, he was diagnosed at six. And we have to more recently, I won't go into detail, but more recently he was taking his finals and he hit an absolute brick wall in terms of focus and motivation, and he wasn't able to, you know, they cannot do, they sort of go into brain fog. They cannot really do any more. And he wasn't medicated, Nick, because my husband didn't want him medicated. So he's managed without medication. But in order to,
Can I ask why your husband was opposed to medication? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I think when he was 6 years old, my husband didn't really want to put him on Ritalin, mm-hmm. which is incredibly strong medication. And he has suffered. I won't say his name, but he has actually performed incredibly well in spite of his condition, I feel very sorry for him because he has to do his finals this summer, this sort of Easter.
This Ritalin contains dopamine, doesn't it? It's quite a powerful drug. I think I've read about it.
Very powerful drug. There are five different types this particular stimulant medication. Mm. There's a stimulant and a non-stimulant, and the psychiatrist will decide which one's better for you. We have to get him to see a psychiatrist privately. It's very expensive. There's no opportunity on the NHS. So I don't know why these specialists are saying that there's an over-medicalisation, because you can't see a doctor for the love of money.
Let me ask you this. Your boy, who we're not going to name, is he able to work?
Yes, he's very high functioning.
Okay.
He's a little bit like me, Nick. I'm a very high functioning bipolar disorder person.
Ah, I see. Okay. And how did you discover your personal condition?
Well, I got very ill when my son was 3 years old.
Right. Okay.
But I managed, but I had to manage. I had no options.
What would you tell these experts who are on this panel?
I think it's definitely a condition. It's definitely an illness. I don't know whether it's a mental illness. It's definitely there. There are many books written on the subject, and that the CEO of ADHD UK was absolutely right. You know, you can't get to see a GP to get diagnosis. You have to go and see a psychiatrist. And psychiatrists are amazing. They have 7 years specialisms training to be a psychiatrist, and they wouldn't willy-nilly give you a diagnosis if your child wasn't suffering from the condition. You know what I mean?
I do. Best wishes to your son. Good luck with however he wants to go in his career. Thank you for that. Richard's in Brentwood. What would you say to this government port, Richard? Are you buying it? Morning.
I totally agree with it, yeah. Absolutely, 100% right.
But then you hear a case like that young lady with her son, of course.
Yeah, very, very small case. My wife's a Senko, and
right.
She would say probably 70% of the cases are for money.
Seriously?
Down to parenting. Lord. And so there is, you know, look, I run a football team, we go to karate, you can see children that have got ADHD, autism, but then you can see the ones that are just rascals, really. I mean, Nick, look, I'm the same age as you. I can remember when I went to school how many children were a little bit, were rascals, and I'd say probably two. Could you remember?
In each class, you mean?
No, the whole school.
The whole school?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I think we had a few more rascals.
Well, in junior school, I'm talking.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, yeah, junior, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Maybe. Yeah, sorry, junior.
I remember the names. The big difference then is there's no gaming, there's no YouTube, there's no TVs, there's no phones.
and the parenting was a bit more respectful, I think. And the problem is now, there's just so much I could tell you, that her life is absolutely... I mean, she was a teacher, she went into a Senko, and her life is hell, really.
Why did she go into Senko, which is special education needs... she's a special education needs coordinator, sorry. Why did she go into that?
Well, when we had her son, she needed to go sort of like have flexible hours. You can't have flexible hours as a teacher, so it made her hours more flexible, so she could drop our son to school and go part-time to be there to drop him, you know, pick him up and be a bit of holiday. So that's why she done it. So when she started at her school, she had five children at school that were diagnosed.
Out of how many would the school have had? Just roughly, how many hundred children, roughly?
220.
225, OK. So when she, and what year was that have been?
She went in 4 years ago.
So there were five out of 220. Sorry, just writing it down. Go ahead. Yep.
Now there's 40.
40 out of 220, yep. Roughly 220 kiddies.
Yep.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, it's massive. And she you know, she loves her job. She doesn't like the parents. And, you know, people come on here too nice. They are really nice. But I'll tell you the truth. It's all down to parenting. The children come into the school, you know, sometimes they're a little bit lively. And she said, you know, just boys or girls or whatever, they're a little bit lively. And she says, parents blame it straight on, you know, they've got ADHD. Mm. Very financial driven. She had a meeting with someone last week and had four children, and they got about £200 each per week per child.
What, so that's... sorry, did you say they had that piece up to £600 additional money?
Up to 800.
800, I'm so sorry.
200 each, yeah. So you get additional money if the children don't sleep. You get additional money if the children don't eat very well. You get taxis to school. It's all, you know, financially driven, 100%. And then I think the big problem you get is it's relentless. They, you know, they're on the phone all the time, they email all the time, they have seen doctors all the time for diagnoses. They just, and now she has the biggest problem at the moment for her now is chatbot, because these people put arguments into chatbot and then email the school, and you can tell it's so, you know, they'll
formulaic. Yeah, I understand. And presumably, lastly, the children who genuinely need your wife's care and attention, she must feel a little distressed that she can't look after the kiddie who genuinely needs help, because there's so many others she has to get through before she can get him or her.
100%, yeah. I mean, the most distressing thing for her is when she sees children are, you know, a little bit lively, but then they go on to this medication. And she said they're lovely little kids. People say they're masking, they're not masking, they're lovely kids, they're coming to school. Then they get diagnosed, then they go into the medication, and she said they change. They're coming like zombies, and she said it's heartbreaking.
Wish her best. What a job she does. Thank you for your input on that. Let's take a couple on social media. Anne in St Albans. My late son would have been 54 had he lived. He had undiagnosed ADHD and severe dyslexia. He was called lazy and inattentive. It made his life a misery trying to do things he simply couldn't do. It is now recognised as being in the autistic spectrum. It's miserable, and it's real. Julia Brown in New Malden. I'm shocked listening to the show. My 11-year-old and my husband have ADHD. My husband is also autistic. We don't get any funding. More importantly, I don't see how on earth funding would help. The kind of things you need as someone with ADHD is understanding, movement breaks, medication if you choose it, but not funding. It should be free. All right, Julia, thank you for that. Do keep them coming. And coming up after the news...
Founded by two college dropouts operating out of Steve Jobs' parents' garage. Last year, it was worth $4 trillion. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, looking at 50 years of Apple.
Core. Happy birthday, Apple. 9:45 LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Sir Keir Starmer is to give an update from Downing Street on cost of living concerns as a result of the conflict in the Middle East. Iran has said the Strait of Hormuz will only reopen to those who comply with its new laws. And an LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. LBC weather: outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. One lane is closed on the M20 eastbound at Junction 6 at Maidstone. It's because of an accident, so one lane's closed for recovery. And then also on the motorways on the M25 clockwise, one lane's closed at Junction 24 at Potter's Bar, but that's because a car has broken down. In Greenford, Sudbury Hill is closed westbound for the emergency repair works. Very busy on the A40 eastbound, heading from the Greenford flyover to Perivale. Some emergency works are taking place, and then also the A40 is closed both ways between the northern rounds about and the Marylebone flyover. It means the A4 is very busy, but also westbound in South Kensington on the A4, there are queues because a car's broken down right near to Exhibition Road.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
We begin this morning with an address to the nation. I know what you're thinking, we always do. But this one's from the Prime Minister, not from me. And then, should the King really go to visit Donald Trump?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Chase is the digital bank that gives you 1% cash back on groceries.
So, can I get cash back on cake mix?
Indeed.
And icing?
Yep.
And sprinkles?
Sure.
And candles?
Yeah, and you can turn all that cash back into a nice birthday treat.
How do you know it's my birthday?
Just a hunch. Get 1% cash back on groceries, fuel and everyday transport when you spend with Chase. Search Chase Bank. 18 plus UK residents. 1% cash back on this debit card spending for your first year. Maximum £15 per month. Eligibility and exceptions apply. May be changed or withdrawn.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Experience. It's knowing when something is worth waiting for and when it isn't. That's why Saga Health Insurance offers unlimited GP appointments whenever you need them. With a choice of flexible plans, prompt tests and treatment, your health is taken care of. And right now, you'll get a £250 gift card when you take out Saga Health Insurance. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. Start a new policy before the 28th of May. New customers over 50 only. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. And for this week only, we're also guaranteeing five winners of £20,000 in our bonus draw. Enter by midnight on Sunday to be in the draw. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
Your life's already digital, from banking and shopping to streaming and learning. So why does sorting government stuff still feel like such hard work? The government is introducing a new digital ID to make access to services quicker and more secure for everyone. But we need to hear from you. Your voice matters. Search Digital ID Consultation to have your say. Digital ID, making public services work for you.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Gaming the system or scratching the surface? Which is it? We'll return to that in a moment. But the name inspired after Steve Jobs visited an Oregon apple farm while he was on a fruitarian diet. 50 years ago, Steve Jobs and business partner Steve Wozniak set up a shop in California, in a Californian garage, and started the company. Last year, Apple, valued $400 trillion. That's right, $400 trillion. LBC's Henry Riley looks back at 50 years of invention.
Good evening. I'm Steve Jobs from Apple Computer. We're very glad to be here tonight.
From High Technology, the computer store. Introducing Apple II, the easy-to-operate home computer.
April Fool's Day, 1976, and college dropouts Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak formed the company. A year later, what's thought to be Apple's first TV advert.
It's called Apple II.
Operating out of Jobs' parents' garage, their first major breakthrough would come in 1984.
Introducing Macintosh. It does all the things you'd expect a business computer to do.
An invention revolutionizing home computing, it was advertised during the Super Bowl.
Macintosh. And you'll see why 1984 won't be like 1984.
There was a third founder, an advisor, who introduced Jobs and Wozniak, Ronald G. Wayne, who had a 10% stake. He sold it just 12 days later for $800. Today, it would be worth $400 billion.
I've never been rich.
I felt, very honestly, that the way these guys were going, they were going to bulldoze their way through anything to make this company succeed.
How many Apple products have you bought over the years?
I've never owned an Apple product.
Inventor Steve Jobs, synonymous with the brand, was briefly sacked. But a decade later, he was back with a bang. And then there was 2001.
Boom. That's iPod. I happen to have one right here in my pocket, matter of fact. There it is, right there.
A pocket-sized, CD-free, portable record player, sold then for $400. The fascination with the company grew, and Steve Jobs became a cult-like figure when Apple once again changed the game.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
With people queuing for days.
So we've been here for 6 days, We have eight more left. Very exciting.
And despite abandoned ideas like the Apple Car, the company continued to grow. And then 15 years ago...
This is a CBS News special report. We are interrupting programming this evening because an American Edison has died. Steve Jobs.
The company has sold 3.1 billion iPhones, and last year Apple was worth $4 trillion. And under the leadership of Tim Cook, they're not slowing down.
To empower our users to shape the future. Here's to the next 50 years, and to the incredible things we'll keep building together.
Right, that is Steve Jobs concluding. I'm sorry, Tim Cook concluding Henry Reilly's report. The Apple CEO, Tim Cook, concluding the report there. Thanks to Davey, to Tim, to Luke and others. It wasn't $400 trillion. It was, as Henry Reilly said, $4 trillion. I don't normally drop people in the Mulligatawny, but can I just tell you that the author of the piece that suggested it was $400 trillion was also the author of the piece you just heard. So I'll leave you to draw your own conclusions, and I'll be having a grown-up conversation about that in minutes to come. $4 trillion, but still an extraordinary success story. Right. Daniel in Reading has been holding on for a long time to talk about, I believe, a child who has ADHD. When you hear that the government-commissioned interim report suggests there is abuse, as a dad, how do you respond? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Hi. I think that there will be reports that look into everything and try to look at every point of view. And actually, I think that what side isn't being looked at is the true cases that are actually being reported and the truth that's going on. I've got.
What is the truth as you see it? Of course, that's what I need to hear, sir.
I've got a son in specialist education with ASD, ADHD, and a number of other things and acronyms that I won't go into now.
So ASD, autism spectrum disorder,
absolutely. And somebody that suffers, somebody that desperately needs help and support. We fought a very long time for him to reach and get a diagnosis, even though it was apparent. He was in mainstream education, but he left mainstream education 4 years ago. He's now nearly 12, not learned without being able to read, being able to write, being able to understand daily life, and subsequently being at specialist education has absolutely flourished.
At age 11, you say he couldn't write, did you say? You don't mean he just wrote badly. He literally couldn't write.
Well, so this was a number of years ago. So four years ago, when he left mainstream education, he couldn't, no. And that was for a number of contributing factors. Yes, he had a one-to-one at school and things, but actually the provision that was in mainstream education just wasn't fit for his needs. And has now flourished. And actually, what I think the report and what's coming out of this is really detrimental to all of the children that really do suffer and desperately need the help and support because of what they have. And it's not something they choose.
Daniel, is the other way of looking at it? I'm delighted your son now has the care he needs. There are many parents who are trying to get through to me now saying they can't get that care. And if there are people gaming the system, using the system... That's not fair for for children such as your own who desperately needs the care and other parents. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do completely understand, but I think we also need to understand that it's not necessarily that there is an oversubscription and people trying to them here. It's is our system fit for purpose? We have an archaic education system that isn't fit for purpose in today's world. Your caller earlier saying we didn't have this back however many years ago. Absolutely correct. I understand that. There wasn't this level of diagnosis because we weren't aware of it. We weren't understanding of it. And even now we're seeing, we're getting all of these cases. One, we're in a massive backlog of cases since COVID. But two, we're understanding this a hell of a lot more than we ever did.
Daniel, good luck with your boy. I hope he progresses through his secondary education. I've got to break in because you're listening to LBC 9:56 news breaking at this time. And Donald Trump, in an interview with The Telegraph, says he's strongly considering pulling the United States out of NATO after it failed to join his war on Iran, something we were discussing earlier. He's labelled the NATO alliance a paper tiger. In the strongest sign yet, the White House no longer regards Europe as a reliable defence partner. Mr. Trump was asked if he would consider US membership of NATO. Quotes, "Oh yes, I would. It's beyond reconsideration. I was never swayed by NATO. I always knew they were a paper tiger. And Putin knows that too, by the way." News just breaking. I'm sure some of my colleagues will take that on. Thanks again, Daniel. Michelle in Hagley. Michelle, what do you want to put into this conversation? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Nick. Nice to talk to you. I haven't spoken to you before, so I'm a little bit nervous. We have a neurodiverse household where you would it's an awful phrase to say, but you would look at us and you'd think we were all pretty normal, successful, right, done well at our jobs.
Yep.
Etc. My son, he's now 15, was diagnosed with ADHD just before COVID. Mm-hmm. And he was at a small village school, and the first thing that he had, and there were lovely teachers, tried their best, but they said, "Oh, I don't think actually we've seen anyone in our school with ADHD before."
Oh.
We thought they were just naughty kids, and I was like, really? So, you know, we're now at high school, we're now in year 10. He is struggling, he's in mainstream school, he's struggling, he's on medication, he doesn't get on with it, it doesn't suit him, but we're getting there. But, you know, he's lucky that I've made myself an expert, I reckon. Since then, my daughter has been diagnosed, she's 21, she's at Oxford University. So again, she got missed all the way through school, I've since found out that she really badly behaved in school, and I wasn't aware. I think it's because she was just educationally up there.
Michelle, we're coming to the last 30 seconds or so together. What advice would you give to a parent who's just discovering that their child might be on the spectrum, might have one of these conditions?
Okay, is go for diagnosis, if that's what you feel they've got. Make yourself an expert. There's lots of credible research out there. It's not all about benefits. It's about getting the right help. And if the money from benefits could go to actually the schools directly for those kids that don't need the additional real physical in-depth support, I think that's where it needs, so that those one-to-ones could happen on a more regular basis. Rod,
I will leave it there, Michelle. Thank you. I wish we had more time. Michelle, you had the last word. Apologies to Jay, to Tuesday, to Adrian and others that we can't get through. Now, that's it for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. To get the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it for me. I'm taking a slightly extended Easter break. I'll be back Tuesday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe and happy Easter.
Thank you, Nick, and same to you as well, with bells on. It is approaching 10 o'clock, and we find ourselves... Well, yesterday at this time, we were a little worried, weren't we, that the sheer gravity, the scale of the situation that the United Kingdom finds itself in was not being properly appreciated by the population, largely because so many of the engines that influence our discourse had, for reasons known only to themselves, decided that Donald Trump's war was a brilliant idea, that he would be a brilliant leader, that Keir Starmer was a fool for not joining in, and that it was deeply shameful for the United Kingdom not to be embarked upon this insane quest. So they can't really now do full reverse verits and admit the scale of the mistake that they made. I think that's probably about to change.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister is preparing to hold a press conference in Downing Street to update the public on the war in Iran. Sir Keir Starmer is expected to cover both the conflict and government support for households. Forecasts by Cornwall Insight suggest that energy bills could rise by £288 in July due to increasing wholesale costs. The Business Secretary Peter Kyle has told LBC this morning ministers are monitoring costs closely.
We are acting today to make sure that we get a grip on the family finances and ensure that we get a grip on the challenges from the cost of living. We are also, as you heard from the Chancellor, looking very carefully at the autumn period when we know that there may well be challenges in the system and who might be affected the most and how we can have appropriate spending in order to support people. And the Chancellor is leading on that work.
Iran has said the Strait of Hormuz will only reopen to those who comply with its new laws. Tehran has effectively closed the shipping lane, which has seen oil and gas prices rise since the start of the conflict. An LBC investigation has found thousands of vulnerable children are being sent to illegal care homes. There are more than 800 that have not been registered with regulator Ofsted and so never face inspections. In one case, a 15-year-old girl was sexually abused by two staff members at a home in County Durham. Care expert Chris Wilde says it's a national crisis.
It's a national catastrophe. No one's talking about it. This is one of the biggest scandals we have in this country right now about children in care being dumped in squalor and abused by criminal gangs, and nobody's doing anything about it to stop it.
The Department for Education says providers operating outside of the law face serious consequences. There's more on the LBC app. Increases in the mandatory national living wage for nearly 2.7 million workers come into force this morning. For employees over the age of 21, their hourly wage will go up by 50 pence to £12.71. Those aged 18 to 20 will see their hourly pay rise by 85 pence to £10.85. Businesses have warned, though, that higher wage bills will force them to increase prices or cut staff. More than a million people in England who are overweight or obese are to be prescribed the weight loss jab Wegovy to prevent heart attacks and strokes. Officials say the jabs will be available on the NHS in the coming months. And NASA says a mission to the moon is on track ahead of a planned launch tonight. Artemis 2 is attempting to send four astronauts on a 10-day journey. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 172 at 10,349. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, outbreaks of rain for northern areas of the UK, cloudy in the south, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Hey Sainsbury's, I'm cooking for everyone this Easter, but I don't want to break the bank. Got any tasty offers?
Well, with Nectar, there's half price on selected sides of salmon. And selected beef joints and whole legs of lamb are better than half price.
Ooh, they'll be as happy as my wallet.
Sainsbury's, good food for all of us. 18 plus, Nectar required, excludes locals, ends 7th of April, subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after 10 and the Prime Minister is scheduled to, I think I would say, address the nation. It's billed as a news conference and, of course, is rightly described as such, but it feels to me a little bit more significant than a run-of-the-mill meet-the-media moment. Not least because it was only put in the diary last night. We will expect him to talk about two things. Well, one thing, but the domestic and international consequences and ramifications of that one thing. Donald Trump's deranged war in Iran and the increasingly obvious impacts that they are likely to have upon us, impacts which Keir Starmer will be called upon to ameliorate, even as various liars and traitors in our political and media establishment continue to try to blame him for it. Listen, on a lower level, it's not very convenient for us, is it? I mean, the worst thing that a phone-in host can be called upon to do is to launch a phone-in off the back of a 45-minute-long live broadcast of somebody else or other people speaking. But one thing that helps is when it kicks off on the top of an hour so that you could hit 11 o'clock fresh and new. So, I mean, we now have to talk among ourselves until quarter past 10. I can't get a phone-in up and running. I suppose we could have booked a guest, but none of us thought of that in time. And therefore, it is to me that the baton is handed next. And I'm fine with that, because there's something I want to really get off my chest. And it is a front page, and I know I go on about this, but if you did what I do for a living and you had spent now the best part of, I think, about a decade and a half listening to people, not so much on this program anymore, but you know that they're out there with extraordinary influence and power. But you were listening to people who have been persuaded of the most ridiculous things. Listening to people who, for example, in the middle of a crisis caused in large part by our dependence upon fossil fuels, people with big platforms and loud hailers and political offices, or at least political positions, calling for more dependency on fossil fuels. I mean, is there anything madder than that? I will mention Brexit briefly, because there will be few examples, touch wood, please God, in our island history of a population being so successfully persuaded to smash itself in the face with a rusty old frying pan. And there are other things as well, putting Boris Johnson in Downing Street, bending the knee for Donald Trump. I mean, our politicians and media figures queuing up to bend the knee for Donald Trump, even as his depravity and derangement was visible and obvious from space. His own family members told us, but no, the Daily Mail knew better. And it is to the front page of the Daily Mail that I direct your attention first today, because even as a slightly enthusiastic chronicler of their decline or of their hideousness, I couldn't quite believe what I read this morning. So if you're not fully across the news, let me fill you in. Donald Trump has made an absolute pig's ear of his Middle Eastern war, which he can't even call a war, because if he called it a war, then that would remind everybody that he's not supposed to undertake these sorts of ventures without congressional approval. So he's called it, well, he's tried to call it a special military operation, but he keeps forgetting to say special because he's stupid. So he calls it a military operation, and because he's stupid, he then occasionally lets slip that he has to call it a military operation, because if he called his war a war, he would be required to secure congressional approval before he even did it, let alone continued it. So Donald Trump has made an absolute mess of everything, not paying attention to all of the people that would have been able to tell him had they been able to fight their way through the army of sycophants that routinely surrounds him in the Oval Office. Again, people from the worlds of politics and the media. Had they been able to get into the room, they could have told him that the Strait of Hormuz would be closed by Iran at the first sign of offensive action from him or Israel or both, and that reopening it would be close to impossible. You certainly would not be able to do it from the air. I'm not claiming that I could have given him that lecture, but I could have made two phone calls to people who know what they're talking about and then happily filled him in words of one syllable. But he had no interest in that, because he was doing it, and now you insert your own dead cat to distract from his extraordinary repetitive presence in the Epstein files, the hideous accusations against him personally contained therein, the state of the US economy, the failure to get a handle on almost all of the things that he claimed he would be able to get a handle on, the unraveling lies, the continuing corruption, moral and quite possibly financial, now that we've seen the speed with which market changes follow announcements from the Oval Office, and the cryptocurrency obsessions and all the rest of it. So he has made an almighty mess. A mess that he is simultaneously aware of and unaware of, because his lizard brain will tell him that he is in trouble.